Sorry, nobody down here except the horror podcasting community's most unwanted.
Agent Matt, Agent Steve, I'm Agent Jody. I've been assigned to do a weekly podcast with you.
Do you believe in the possibility of transatlantic podcast?
That would be completely illogical. Given the time difference, the dedication required would exceed a human being's capabilities.
Unless, of course, the podcast involved a TV show about extreme possibilities, a melding of horror, sci-fi, and mystery.
When Dead Lantern offers us no weekly podcast, might we not finally turn to an X-Files podcast as a possibility?
A culmination of review, analysis, and intellectual discussion on a science fiction television phenomenon by international participants. Could such a thing exist?
The Explodey Files, a weekly X-Files podcast brought to you by DeadLantern.com. I want to believe that it won't suck.
Welcome to episode 19 of the Zombie Girls podcast. With me tonight, it's a little more of an intimate setting. With me tonight is Ariel, aka The Last Girl.
Hi, everyone.
Unfortunately, Brianne and Summer could not be here tonight, but they will both be back for our next episode, episode 20, our special 20th episode, because we've only been doing this for like 2 years. So, but we have something special planned for the 20th episode, so everyone will be back. But tonight, we're just going to kind of, we're going to keep it on the low key, and it'll be just you and me.
Yep.
And tonight, we're going to be talking a different kind of iconic monster.
Vampires.
All right. So to warm up, what do you say we talk a little bit about different things that we've been watching?
Sounds good.
How, by the way, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay.
All right, cool. All right. So what have you been watching?
Okay. Well, I finally got around to watching Wreck, which you've been telling me to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Like forever and a day. And Summer told me last time we were recording that it was on like on demand.
Uh-huh.
So, like, a couple days later, I went home and watched it, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Did we build it up too much?
No. I mean, the ending was, like, why I watched the whole movie, basically. Because,
yeah.
Like, the rest of it, it's a, I mean, I saw Quarantine first.
Yeah.
It's a shot-for-shot remake, and, like I said earlier, I kind of miss Jennifer Carpenter. Like, she's just, she's so good. Her reactions to what's happening in the mm-hmm. movie are just, like, spot on. And I just, like, enjoy her so much.
Even she's
just, like,
awesome.
Yeah, even just, like, the beginning scenes where they're goofing around at the firehouse and she's, like, playing basketball and, like, beating all the guys. It's entertaining. I really like that part. But Wreck was really good and the ending was awesome.
Yeah, I feel like that's definitely the stronger ending of the two. And but more importantly, you have to watch that one so that you can watch Wreck 2, which to me is actually better than the first movie.
Yeah,
so
now
it's
I'm
kind
really
of,
looking forward to that.
It's totally worth like kind of sitting through it.
Yeah, but that like scary, like creepy woman at the end, just like that has like been in my brain since I watched it.
Yeah, she's really, and I can't wait to, I mean, I really seriously can't wait for you to see Wreck 2 so we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a lot more of that. Like, if that's, me personally, like, that kind of stuff is really what gets under my skin.
Oh, totally.
Is anytime there's, like, demon-y stuff, you mm-hmm. know? So, for me, that ending was, like, such a cool surprise. Like, it took a genre that I love and then gave it, like, a twist in a way that scares me. The way zombies movies don't really scare me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
I know what you mean.
And the second movie kind of expands on that, so. But I don't want to spoil that advice. I will stop. Right on. So you liked it then.
Yeah, I totally liked that. And then I think it was AMC a couple weeks, like a week ago or so, was having like this vampire movie marathon, like old vampire movies.
Uh-huh.
So I watched a bunch of the Christopher Lee Hammer
Yay,
vampire movies.
Love Christopher Lee.
Yeah, he's so awesome. So I watched, like, the ones from, like, the, like, late 60s, early 70s, and they're just so entertaining. Like, I mean, they're not, anyways, not all of them are, like, you know, just these wonderful, wonderful horror movies. But even the ones that have, like, slightly weaker plot lines are mm-hmm. still just, like, so entertaining. And my dad and I, like, used to watch all of these movies when I was a kid. So to me, they're kind of just, like, they're almost, like, comforting in a weird way.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, I think that just comes back to you. Those actors being particularly charismatic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, definitely. A lot of those things aren't really about the story. They're about kind of watching those particular people do their thing on screen.
Yeah. And I learned an interesting fact, too, that they have, you know, the guy on AMC, he always, like, introduces the movies before they play them and kind of tells you some backstory stuff, that Christopher Lee, apparently, with one of the movies, was so disgusted by the dialogue, he thought it was so cheesy, that he refused to speak.
I think I heard about this. What movie was it? It's one of the later vampire ones,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's one of the later ones, because it's all in color and everything. But yeah, he doesn't say a single word the whole movie.
Hilarious.
Because he refused to. And then he went on, like, hiatus. Like, he didn't make any more vampire movies, like, any more Dracula movies with Hammer for, like, 10 years or something. So uh-huh. they made, like, offshoot ones without him. And then he came back and finally, like, spoke again. I just thought that was interesting. That, like, I mean, think about, like, pulling that on a director. Like, no, I will not use your dialogue. And yet they don't kick you off the film. Like, they still use you.
Yeah, you can't really get away with it unless you're basically Christopher Lee. Exactly. Okay, it looks like it was Dracula, Prince of Darkness.
Hmm. Yes, thank you.
Hello, Google machine. Thank you very much. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And then, yesterday I watched the original Piranha.
Oh, how was that? I bet it was awesome.
It actually was, like, a lot of fun because okay. I went into it not expecting much, you know, just uh-huh. sort of like thinking of it as those, like, old B horror movies from yeah. like the 50s, but kind of like it's, you know, 70s or whatever. So it's older, but I just kind of thought of it in that way. And it was uh-huh. a lot of fun. Like, it's super silly.
Yeah.
But there's a huge body count in that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, is that a Joe Dante film? I want to say it is, which is good.
I think you might be right.
Dante
yeah.
film in my
but it's like, it's very entertaining. And I mean, you see, like, little kids at a summer camp being, like, attacked by piranhas. And,
really?
Yeah.
I have to admit, I have never seen any of the Piranha films.
I hadn't either, and so I'd always, this is sort of silly, but...
Yep, Joe Dante.
Yeah, I've wanted to see Piranha ever since there was this episode of The Simpsons where Milhouse talks about how he saw Piranha and how awesome it was.
Oh my god, that's like the best reason to see it ever.
And I haven't seen, like, the remake that they just made. I haven't seen that.
I really want to see the remake.
So do I.
I saw, like, the leaked 10 minutes. Have you seen that?
No.
It's, like, really wicked bloody.
Nice.
Like, people being torn in half and people's faces Sweet. Getting ripped off. And so it's definitely like Alexandre Aja came through with, uh-huh. with the gore. Do you like my French accent there?
Oh, yeah.
Right on. So are you recommending Piranha?
I would. You know what? I would recommend, like, watching it with, like, a group of friends, mm-hmm. going into it just thinking, like, this is going to be silly. We're going to have fun, have a few beers or something and watch it.
So it's like a fun, bad movie, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? Sometimes those are like... Those are the best, you know what I mean?
I know.
Like, you're just in the mm-hmm. mood for something that's just total garbage.
Yeah. But, like, garbage in a good way. Because there are yeah. some movies that are just awful and don't work that mm-hmm. way.
Yeah.
Know?
Oh, totally.
It takes, like, a very specific kind of tone.
Right on. Okay.
And then, House of the Devil. We were just talking about that. I saw that.
That's
and
a good one.
I really enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just, like, the late 70s, early 80s setting mm-hmm. that it was in. Like, all the... set pieces and the clothing that they wore was, like, really well done. And I like the actresses a lot too, like,
yeah,
the two friends that were in it. I was kind of sad that her best friend, like, died so early on.
Oh, I love that scene though.
Yeah,
that's
it's such a great
unexpected scene. And that actor, he's been in a few different things. He, if you remember, did he look familiar at all to
yeah,
you?
Yeah, he totally
he's
did.
the crazy batshit boyfriend in The Signal.
Oh
yes. I don't know who he is. I don't, like, but everything I've seen him in, I really like him.
Yeah, he seems like a good character actor, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. So I liked that. And it had, like, the tall man, you know?
Oh, Angus Scrimm.
Yeah.
Let me get that right, because I got it wrong once on the podcast, and I got, like, lots of mail about it. It was when we did the episode It was when we did the Masters of Horror episode.
Wait, pause. Is it the Thin Man or the Tall Man?
It's the Tall Man. Did you say the Thin Man?
No, I said the Tall Man.
Okay.
But then I was thinking of the Thin Man, like that movie.
Well, know? Yeah, like the mystery ones. Yeah. No, it's the Tall Man.
Okay.
Yeah, good. No, you had it right. Tall Man. You're like, the old man. Whatever.
Anyway, he was really good in that, too. And I really liked it. And I liked the directions that it took. And, like, it got... What I liked about it, too, was when she's in that room, you know, and she wakes up and she's all, like, tied up and they're in the middle of doing the ceremony where they've got, like, the blood and the goat skull pouring it on her and stuff. I mean, she gets out of that, like, wicked fast and then just, like, stabs the guy with, like, a shard of glass in the stomach and, like, then just, you know, kills all these people and runs off. I mean, that was really cool that it didn't have, like, this really long, drawn-out... scene there of like any kind of like torture or anything like that. It wasn't quite what I was expecting. I wasn't expecting her to like sort of flip that quickly and get it over on
them. I think it like really kind of recaptured, I mean obviously it looked very 80s style with the styling of the clothes and like it was meant to be that era, and even just from like the very opening scene where they had like the what is that called, where they have like the title screen, like,
early 80s late 70s and then the title comes on, it was perfect.
Totally. So like right away there like built that, it kind of built that atmosphere right away, which is awesome. But I think it also just sort of the pacing and the ideas were very reminiscent of like the late 70s slow builds.
Yeah, I mean it's so slow in the beginning, especially like they take such a long time, and it's really great of her just in the house after they leave, you know, with her kind of exploring and poking around and ordering pizza and like dancing around with her like headphones on.
I love the dance montage.
Yeah, but they did a really good job with that, because it does build so slowly there, and then just pow.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know a lot of people took issue with it, because for that exact same reason, that they didn't like the slow pace, thought it was boring. A lot of people think it's boring, but I don't know. I think it's one of those things that you kind of, if you're looking for like a cheap thrill, that's not the movie you're going to watch.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, it's kind of a cheap thrill in the end, but it's definitely something you have to be like really kind of willing to surrender yourself to and just allow yourself to get slowly pulled into.
Yeah.
And if you let that happen, it's just like it's a nice surprise.
Yeah.
You know, of a film.
I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Have you watched anything else?
Oh, the other thing was for my birthday, my dad got me this box set thriller.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I don't know if anybody has heard of this. It's like, it's an old television show. It's kind of like a mix of almost The Twilight Zone meets Alfred Hitchcock Presents, kind of. it's really good. They're like hour-long thriller.
Oh.
And it's hosted by Boris Karloff, and he's awesome.
Right on.
Yeah, and... they're just, you know, kind of, some of them are horror-ish, some of them are supernatural, creepy, but they're beautifully done, and they're really, really entertaining. Like, I would totally recommend anybody who can get their hands on this, like, watching it, because there's a ton of episodes, and I think it was on for, like, 3 seasons, and you get the, like, all 3 seasons together, and I'm just, like, I'm blown away with how good each of these episodes is.
Really?
Yeah.
Really, it's really funny that it'd be something that's kind of, I mean, maybe it's not, maybe I just am ignorant and I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I don't think I'd ever heard of thriller, except for when you said the Boris Karloff thing, like that, like rung a bell, but I still would not necessarily have heard, I mean, like when I heard thriller, I didn't put that together. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that it's something that people talk about that much anymore. I mean, everybody knows like Twilight Zone and
Night Alfred Gallery
Hitchcock and Night Gallery. Yeah. I think this is a little bit, like, not as many people know about it, and it wasn't on for as long as any of those shows. Although Night Gallery was only on for a couple seasons, too.
I have no idea. See, I'm not, like, I have to admit, I have not seen a lot of these things.
But when I'm done watching it, I will bring it over, because it's totally awesome. But the one thing that I think that is really lame about it, okay, it has amazing music. Like, the background music in the whole series is, like, really, really good, and it just totally sets the tone. And when people were sort of clamoring for this to come out on DVD online, everybody was like talking about this music and like how wonderful it was. And so for some reason they fucking like recorded the music so goddamn loud that like in order to hear people talking, you have to turn it up. But then the music just like is blasting.
I hate that when they get that mix wrong.
Yeah, it's really wrong. And I think they did it intentionally because people liked the music so much. But for me, it's just like, that's like the one downside to watching it.
I hate that when you're like playing with the remote the whole movie.
Exactly.
Like, well, up for dialogue. Oh, my ears. Down, 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 down. Up for dialogue. Oh, my freaking ears.
Yeah. But for this movie or for these shows, like I'm willing to put up with it because they're really good. And I love that kind of
format.
Yeah.
Right on. Very cool. Did you watch anything else?
Not really.
All right, my turn. Well, I actually watched a few good things. So let me start off sort of non-horror related and work into horror.
Okay.
I saw Red, which is that...
oh, yeah.
With it's like a, based on a comic, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it has like Bruce Willis and...
Morgan Freeman.
John Malkovich and...
Helen Mirren.
Yeah. And then Mary Louise Parker.
Right.
I kind of went into it not really expecting too much, maybe a couple laughs, whatever. And for the most part, it was pretty good. I mean, it was definitely enjoyable. It wasn't great, but it was definitely like it was a perfectly entertaining way to pass a couple of hours. John Malkovich is great in it, actually. He to me was like, I totally expected Helen Mirren to be the highlight of the movie because, you know, it's like Helen Mirren with a gun. Hello.
Yeah,
that's gonna be awesome. And it is, you know, it is cool. She's a good character, but John Malkovich truly like stole the movie to me. He was so funny in that movie. Like,
it can be.
He's just like, he's basically like the did you ever watch A-Team?
Yeah.
Okay, he's like the Murdoch of their group.
Okay.
And he does a great job. He's just like he was in these experiments in the 70s and they gave him like LSD every day for like 9 years. So he's like totally paranoid and crazy, and he does it like really actually really well. So I mean, I would not necessarily rush to the theater, but when it comes out on DVD, it's definitely worth a go.
Yeah, I mean, I read a couple of reviews of it in the paper, and like I didn't want to see it in the theater necessarily, but I'll definitely rent it because it looked just really entertaining.
It, you know what? It's just, it's nothing like that's going to blow you away, sure. But it's a great, it's a perfectly acceptable way to spend 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. Like I was totally entertained. I walked away with it feeling like I had not wasted my time. I got a few really good laughs, you know, that weren't in the trailer, which is always nice.
Oh God, no kidding.
But mostly from John Malkovich. I don't know why that his character fucking cracked me up. I was laughing kind of like an idiot at one point.
Was the action good in it?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, you've kind of seen the action if you've seen the trailer. Yeah. There isn't a whole lot more action than that, but it's more like I don't really know how to describe it. You know, it kind of appeals to the same part of me that something like, do you remember Toy Soldiers?
Yes.
With Will Wheaton and Sean Astin.
Yes.
And who else is in that? Lou Gossett Jr. In the same way that I have a soft spot for things like that.
Yeah, I can.
You'll enjoy
that.
Red. I probably should not put that out on the internet, but I totally had like my junior high school boyfriend bought me that on VHS, and I watched it like 100 times because I thought Will Wheaton was so cute. But whatever, I'm just gonna stop. Stop.
I read an interview with Morgan Freeman where he said he had like a huge crush on Helen Mirren, was like so excited to work with her.
He's, who
like,
doesn't have a crush so on Helen Mirren?
I know.
She is. I just thought that was adorable. She's a hot old broad. I'm like, go on, girl. She looks beautiful. I mean, she looks beautiful in it.
Yeah.
You know, she just is. Okay, so then the other movie I watched, I've been like on a thriller kick lately. I've been watching a lot of thrillers.
Mm-hmm.
Like last time, what did I had watched like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Girl Who Played with Fire, like,
right.
And I watched something else, but I can't remember what it was. Doesn't matter. Anyways, I finally saw Winter's Bone, which is something that I had been waiting forever to see. That's the one where the girl, she it's like in the Ozarks, and her father has been, he put his house up for bail and then disappeared. And so the state's going to come to, or the bail bonds is going to come take it away. And so she has to kind of negotiate through this world of, of Ozarky meth dealers in order to try to track down her father so she doesn't lose her home, because her mother's like mentally ill and she's got these two little kids that she needs to take care of. And, let's see. It's a very good movie, like a beautifully acted, well written, good film. I think there's been, for people who are looking for maybe a little bit more action, it's going to be disappointing. It's definitely a very slow film. Not much happens in it. If you stick with it, there's the kind of like the final scene is pretty intense, especially like if you followed this journey. And there definitely is sort of like a cultural anthropological aspect to the movie that makes it really interesting. Just sort of seeing the dynamics of that and the weird like gender roles and gender stratification of that community. Like, you know, when she goes to try to like talk to someone who's like kind of like a big wig amongst the meth dealing hillbilly people, like they're like, don't you have a man to do this for you? Like, it's clear like that there's like these really ingrained gender roles and this sort of, you know, openly embraced domestic system of domestic violence, as well as just I mean, it's very a violent culture, you know? And so from that perspective, it was fascinating. And, you know, you really, really feel for the girl who's trying to, I mean, she takes a vicious beating, and she just keeps persevering, trying to find her father, because she's like trying to raise these kids. There's this part where like she teaches them how to like gut a squirrel, and I mean, oh God, it must have been real, like it had to have been. Aww. Yeah, I know. It was kind of I kind of had to look away when it was like showing them how to pull the intestines out, but yeah, it's pretty intense. But so, I mean, I would definitely recommend it with the caveat of it's not an action-packed thriller. It's not like a big mystery. You pretty much know what's going on throughout most of it. You don't know exactly what happened, but you kind of get the gist of it. But it's an interesting story. Like, it's an interesting experience to watch it. So with like that in mind, if that still sounds interesting to you, then there's definitely something there to enjoy. I really liked it, but it was not like the same kind of like noir. I think it's hard after Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of set the bar for thrillers as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but it's always really cool and interesting when you get to take a look at another culture like that you don't,
I mean, you never see that. Yeah. I mean, like, the only time you ever see that is in, like, The Hills Have Eyes. Right. You know what I mean? Which, you know what I mean?
But like, a more realistic take.
Yeah, exactly. On it. And it was, from that perspective, really interesting. Okay, so, and then, my other two, I have two more.
Okay.
So, one of them was a lot of fun. I got to see Joe Dante's new film, The Hole.
Ooh.
Yes, and I am a huge Joe Dante fan. You know who that is? Obviously, Piranha.
Yes.
Although I've never seen Piranha. Now I'm like, maybe I'll see it. But he did The Burbs and Gremlins and Small Soldiers.
Mm.
Inner Space. I mean, like, Joe Dante is... I mean, he makes fun movies. But he also was his Masters of Horror episode was... the one about the Iraq war vets that come back as zombies.
Oh, I love that one.
I know. I can't think of what it was called now. But anyways, so I'm a huge fan. And ever since I heard that he had made this film, The Hole, which basically he made it and he's been looking for distributors. He like did it in 3D before like the 3D stuff became so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like it was actually created in 3D, like made to see that scene in 3D as opposed to the post conversion. When I say it's gone crazy, that's what I'm talking about. The unnecessary post conversion stuff. But he was like trying to find a distributor, couldn't find one. Like some people had seen it like at festivals or, you know, in some showings and giving it really good reviews. So of course I'm like, because nobody does like teenage suburban horror comedy quite as effectively as Joe Dante.
Yeah. Oh no, he's so good at that.
Like he's the master of that, you know? So I was like totally excited to see that. So I got the opportunity to see it, and it was, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but That being
the look
said,
on your
though,
face is like...
Well, I think maybe I, you know what I mean? Like, I was a little too excited. But here's the thing. It's like, I think in this case, this film actually suffers from the 3D strictly because you could tell there were parts of the movie that were meant, written specifically because he knew it was going to be in 3D.
Uh-huh.
And so that's my only complaint. There's a couple of, in like the third act of the film, the final act and the conclusion of one of the other side stories is a little disappointing because you could tell that it was meant to be more spectacle as opposed to like really staying true to the tone of the rest of the film.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's like my only complaint. The acting with the kids is really, really awesome. Like, really, he has a talent for making kid actors, like, not too precocious, but still really likable. It's got the boy from Cirque de Freak, the Vampire's Assistant thing. That movie, The Vampire's Assistant. Did you not see that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, it's got that kid, and it's got, I don't know what the girl is from. She's super cute. And there's like a little brother, but there's like this scene with this, first of all, the plot, basically, okay. What the story about is about, these kids, they move with their mom, who's played by Terry Polo, to this little town. They used to live in New York, but now they're living in this small town, and like the teenager's like pissed off about it because he's left all his friends. But then of course he finds that there's like a hot girl next door and all that stuff is really funny and cute. Cause he's like, you know, like checking her out and like, doesn't want her to see, but then like the little brother like runs over there and like points to where he's at. I don't know. It's really funny and cute. And what they discover is down in the basement, there is this like locked hole in the ground, like this like gate that's locked. It's got like 8 locks on it. And of course they open it. And then when they open it, scary shit starts to happen. I don't want to spoil it because there's some good stuff. There's this one, fucking, oh man, nothing is creepier than like clown dolls. I swear to God, there's this creepy like jester clown doll thing that,
yeah,
is
no,
so...
that's always creepy.
And it's really effective, and I don't know if I'm just a wimp, but no, that really freaked me out. So there's definitely some good scares in this movie. It's something that you could show to not like a super little kid, but a little kid could see it. It's definitely made for that kind of audience,
mm-hmm.
But it's really reminiscent to me of like children's horror from when we were growing up with things like The Gate, which The Gate was like really legitimately scary.
Yeah.
This is like that.
Okay.
Or what's another one that was really great from when we were a kid that was super scary?
People Under the Stairs.
People Under the Stairs, but scarier than People Under the Stairs. This one's definitely got more. It is a perfect companion piece with The Gate because they're both about like scary shit coming out of a hole, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely. When that comes out, I totally recommend The Hole.
Okay.
Good stuff. And then the last thing I saw, this is going to be my controversial pick because I am the only person on the fucking planet that likes this movie. I saw Poor Case Rachel. 39. And everybody panned it, hates it. I thought it was really good. And you know
good
what? I don't care. I don't
fuck
care.
Fuck everyone else.
Exactly. Well, no, I mean, not fuck everyone else, but like, I don't know. Like, I'm going to go to a bat for this movie because this is my legitimate opinion. Like, even though it's not a popular opinion, this is how I feel about it. This movie gave me the creeps. It really, I mean, Renee Zellweger at first, you know, I was like, I don't know if I can buy her in this. But by the time stuff, like, gets rolling, like, I was buying what she was selling. It was working for me. And the girl is hella creepy. It's the little girl from Silent Hill.
Oh, okay.
And she is hella creepy in this movie. So,
I love creepy little kids. Like, when that's done effectively, ugh.
And you can totally tell this is an older movie back when, like, before The Hangover and What's His Butt got famous. What's his name? Bradley Cooper.
Yes.
So it's clearly before Bradley Cooper was famous because he's like totally small, unimportant part. But there are a couple of scenes in that movie that are like really disturbing. Like there's a part where like Renee Zellweger steps in with the parents and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening in that moment is pretty intense. And the closing scene is the part that really freaked me out.
Well, so, hearing you talking about it is like totally.
Well, I don't
sold
wanna
me on wanting to
oversell it. I don't want to oversell it because that being said, part of, I think, the enjoyment of why I had such a great time with this movie is that I went into it with less than zero expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I expected it not only to not be good, but to totally suck balls. So when it turned out to be pretty creepy and, like, it caught me off guard, and an unexpected good time is always better than, like, a regular good time. You know what I mean? So I don't want to say that it's going to, like, change your view of horror forever and it's the finest film of 2010 or anything like that. But it was a surprisingly effective little flick. So don't completely write it off. If you get the opportunity to check it out, I recommend it.
Very cool.
Okay. All right. So that's it for my what have I been watching. All right. So should we talk about some movie trailers?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So the first one we're going to talk about tonight, a new Anthony Hopkins film called The Right.
You know, the interesting thing about skeptics is that we're always looking for proof. The question is, what on earth would we do if we found it? What did you believe?
I believe that people prefer to lie to themselves than face the truth.
Last year, the Vatican received over 500,000 reports of demonic possession.
This was taken at an exorcism in Turin.
It's not the devil. It's just a very, very sick girl. She doesn't need a priest, she needs a shrink.
I haven't prayed in years. Last night I found myself praying for you.
It knows you. It knows all your sins.
You do not speak to it. It's the devil.
I ain't coming for you.
Your name! Give me your name! God help me!
You can only defeat it.
All right, so The Right. You want to describe the plot? Okay, in that case, I will. That was such a deer in the headlights head shake. Well, I was just thinking about... you're totally going to be doing one of the synopses of the movie
tonight. That's fine. I was just
thinking... Don't give me that deer in the headlights look again.
I was just trying to think, like, what... I mean, I could tell you about the trailer. We watched it like 5 minutes ago.
I know. Shame on you. Shame. Okay, I'll tell it. So it's supposedly, it's another one of these demon possession films that's supposedly based on real events. It starts off saying that, like, you know, that the Vatican had ordered to have an exorcist in every single, what are they called, like, parish?
Something like that.
Something like that. And that how there's, like, you know, hundreds of thousands and bazillionties different reports.
Bazillionties.
Yeah, it's a number. I didn't invent that. It's real. reports of exorcisms. And I guess it's basically another exorcism film where there's, like, this girl. There's, like, a young priest. And he's, like, she's not really possessed. She's just sick. And he's like, no, it's the devil. And then she starts throwing up nails and speaking like a demon. So I'm assuming she really is possessed.
She, like, tries to strangle the priest.
Yes. And... well, what are you going to do? But
everyone so does that.
It looks like, I mean, here's the thing. I don't know. We're living in a post-Last Exorcism world where that twist is no longer acceptable. So I'm going to work under the assumption that in this case it's not. I'm kind of done with the is she isn't she really possessed thing. I'm ready to just buy in and go. I mean, I liked Last Exorcism, and I stand by that. But now we've done that, so agreed. I'd like to get past that discussion. Like, you know, like in every horror movie, how they have to be like, there's no such thing as vampires. There's no such thing as zombies.
Right.
Okay. We, as an audience, are being asked to buy it. So you, as the people on screen, if you could just get on board with that, let's go. let's leave that on the cutting room floor. I'm ready to explore, like, scary exorcism time.
I totally agree.
But here's the thing is, like, there's, you know, great caliber of actors.
Love and, Anthony Hopkins.
I could watch Anthony Hopkins read a phone book, pretty much, you know? So I am cautiously optimistic. And I think this one may be one that Summer will actually like.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I'm ready for a good exorcism movie.
I am, too. I mean, I like those kind of movies, and when they're done well, it's really enjoyable. Like, I just recently watched the third Exorcist movie, because, like, the second one is, like, supposedly
Heretic or whatever.
But yeah. The third one was actually really good.
That's the one with the gardening shears and the crawling on the ceiling, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think I saw that when I was like 10 or something and it fucked me up.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed that one. And I just, you know, I just saw it for the first time and I really liked it. I thought it was well done and the actors were really good. And yeah, I mean, I like that kind of movie. So when it's done well, I totally enjoy myself. I buy into it. It creeps me out. So I'm totally on board if it's a good movie.
It seems like, and I wonder if this is just, you know, something in my head, but it seems like, you know how, like, you associate, like, fads and subgenres of horror with certain periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to look at this period of time as, like, the religious horror period of time. You know what I mean? Because we have things like The Last Exorcism, Legion, which apparently is terrible. I haven't seen it. We have that Priest movie coming out.
Right.
This Last Rites. I mean, there's been Wreck and Wreck 2, both. I mean, and so it just seems like that's kind of where horror is at the moment. I just wonder if, like, right now we're going to get a lot more of those types of movies.
It seems to be a trend that's happening, so.
I mean, even Solomon Kane had a lot of really strong religious overtones. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know how also it's like there's that thing where you'll, like, learn a word and then you start to hear it everywhere?
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe I've just had the thought and now I'm like, it's everywhere! You know, like.
And you also really like those kind of movies,
I do.
And they're very effective for you because of your upbringing and all that, so.
I like anything that's kind of, like, based on weird, like, Christian-y sort of, like, but, like, twisted Christian tales, like, like the prophecy movies or Fallen.
Right.
I like that. I don't know.
Oh, God, I haven't thought about Fallen in
years.
That's
a great
one. Such a good one.
That's a great one. At some point, we've got to do, like, a religious horror thing.
Yeah.
We've got to do,
totally.
We've got to do, like, prophecy series, and we need to do, like, Fallen and just, like, all those. You need to see the prophecy movie just so you can see Vigo's role in it.
Okay.
He has a little tiny cameo, and this is before he was, like, a big deal. It was before G.I. Jane and stuff. And he is so freaking creepy.
Awesome.
It's great. Okay. So, all right. So, back to the actual movie, The Rite. So, what do you think? Are you intrigued? Are you into it? Are you going to check it out? What?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, like, as it builds and gets closer, like, I don't know if I'll see it in the theater, if I'll want to, like, watch it at home or whatever, but I'm definitely intrigued. I love Anthony Hopkins, always have, always will, unless he turns into, like, a Mel Gibson or something, and then maybe I'll have doubts about him. But
you're like, speaking of religious weirdos. God. Did you ever see The Passion of the Christ?
God, no.
Me neither.
But yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. I love good exorcism type movies, so you know, I think it could be really good. I mean, you only get a glimpse of it, so
yeah,
you know, I don't know, but I'm interested. I'm into it.
Me too. And I also like the kind of, like, dark, spooky, desolate, stark kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, no, it looked really cool.
Okay, you know what it reminds me of almost, and I know I keep talking about this and we need to move on, but it kind of, in the atmosphere of that movie reminds me of the atmosphere that you'll get in, like, a lot of movies that are, like, supposed to be, like, you know, middle ages, sort of pre-Renaissance kind of, like, a time of like, suspicion and ignorance. And,
yeah, I can see that.
But what's the word I'm looking for? where you're like throw salt over your shoulder.
Superstitious.
Like a superstitious sort of anti-science period of time. Yeah. Like you kind of get that same kind of like in the name of the rose kind of feeling.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, moving on. when I watched it, I didn't really have time to process it. So I'm like, as we're talking about it, I'm processing it and kind of like thinking more about it. So that's why I keep going back to it. But I'm not going to because we're moving on. All right. So that's basically it for trailers. Are y'all comfy and ready to go?
Yep. I'm good.
As you readjust. It's cool. Take your time. Do what you got to do. Get your sock monkeys out of your butt. Do you need some help?
No, my pillow. Oh, God.
Don't worry about it. You can bump it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Because this is all going to get cut out. So you got to be comfy. Do you need the total pillow?
No, I think I'm good.
All right.
Yeah.
I can come help you if you need help. I mean, like, you know, sometimes you can't, like, because you got the mic. I get it.
Okay. I'm good.
All right. So tonight we're going to be talking about two movies. It's fine. Totally. That was not.
It just whacked me in the head. I leaned back and was like, "Pop."
Like, who you think you are, bitch?
Yeah. Okay, I'm good.
Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about two movies, as usual. We're going to be talking about 30 Days of Night, and then it's direct to DVD sequel. Boo! Boo! 30 Days of Night, Dark Days.
Is there any reason to review it now?
Spoiler alert, it sucked. Just kidding. All right, so let me break down the details on 30 Days of Night. You ready? Mm-hmm. It's from 2007. It's directed by David Slade, who also directed Hard Candy, which is a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
And Eclipse, which is one of the Twilight movies, so I will not be seeing it.
That's weird.
Yeah. But you know what? Here's the thing is, like, he did Hard Candy, which is, like, this, like, smaller independent film. And then he's got to do his, like, big money project so that he can do something else good.
I guess that's true.
Okay. So, anyways, it's directed by David Slade. And it's starring Josh Harnett as Eben, which every time I hear that, I just think of the Sublime song. Do you remember that song?
No.
Eben, you changed.
No.
Don't make me sing the whole song. No. I know all the words. You don't want it to happen, but it might.
Okay, I remember it.
You're a liar. And Melissa George as Stella, and she obviously was in more recently in Triangle, which is a great movie.
So good.
Danny Houston plays Marlo, the leader of the vampires. And what's just interesting is that all the vampires have names, even though they're never, ever spoken on screen.
Really?
Never. Yeah, they never refer to them by name, but the first time you ever see they have names is in the credits.
I didn't even notice that.
Because
that
they're based on characters from the comics.
Right. Right. That makes sense.
Ben Foster plays the Stranger. He's great in this.
He is so good.
And Mark Boone Jr., who I love from, have you ever seen Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah. I mean, just a few episodes here or there, but yeah.
But he's in that show, and he's great in this as Bo Brower. Mm-hmm. And the film, for those of you who don't know, which has to be no one, but is based on a 3-issue comic book miniseries written by Steve Niles and illustrated by Ben Temple Smith. And the deal with this is, actually, the film it was originally pitched by Steve Niles as a film, but when it was rejected, he, rather than just scrapping the idea altogether, he decided to turn it into a comic book. And then once it became a comic book, like, people, obviously, it was like, it turned out to be like a huge hit for him, got him the kind of the notoriety that his earlier work did not, including Catching the Eye of Sam Raimi, who was originally attached to direct this, but then decided to step back and just be a producer. So it was done through Ghost House.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Well, see what if you took the time to read Wikipedia, you too could know this information. Okay, so why don't you break down the synopsis for us? Synopsize.
Okay, so this is a great movie, and it's set in Alaska, Barrows, Alaska. And this is a city where for 30 days during the winter, the sun doesn't rise at all. It's just completely dark the whole time.
It's in the Arctic Circle.
Yes. Which is just like, I think that premise alone is just so fascinating.
Yep.
So it's like the day before the city goes dark for 30 days and people are like leaving to, you know, because a lot of people obviously do not want to be in the dark for 30 days. Imagine
yeah,
that.
No shit.
So the town.
In the cold in the yeah, dark for 30 days.
Freezing. Yeah. So I think the town goes from being, you know, like over 1,000 people to being like, what, 150 or
something
so
like
people.
That. Yeah.
So it gets like really small because so many people leave. Anyways, it centers around this main character, Eben, who is the sheriff of the town, mm-hmm. and his wife, who is like a
she's a fire marshal or yeah, something. But they're separated,
right? They're separated, and you know, they still it seems like they still are very much in love, kind of with each other, but they're not together. And their friends are kind of trying to get them back together. She wants to leave for the 30 days,
totally avoid scene.
Yeah, just completely avoid him, not talk to him, not even let him know that he's in town or that she's in town. Excuse me. So while all this is happening. And she's trying to get out. There's this stranger who is played, you said earlier, by Ben Foster.
Well, it has a great opening.
Yes.
Like, the opening image is this just total desolate, icy wasteland. But then there's this, like, ominous giant black boat
mm-hmm.
sitting out in the middle of it. And he's, like, this creepy, like, San Francisco homeless dude with like big
yeah.
woolly jacket on
and like the most disgusting teeth you've ever seen.
Dude, like there will be no Frenching in this man's future.
Oh,
like
yeah.
But okay, continue, sorry.
Anyway, so he's come into town and all of these sort of like bizarre things start happening in the town. These people, sledding dogs, all of them get like slaughtered, which is so sad because they make you look at them and it's just
yeah, they're
really,
like in pools
really
of doggy
sad.
Blood. Bad
and
times.
The stranger guy ends up at this local diner
well,
where
I think it's also important to mention that
mm-hmm.
at one point the sheriff and his partner, Billy,
yeah.
find this like burnt pile of cell phones. Which
right.
to me is really clever because like that's the big loophole in horror movies now. It's like, what do you do about cell phones?
Yeah.
Everybody has one now, so you're never really cut off.
Yeah, so it leads you to believe that obviously this stranger guy has like come into town and sort of is making it very difficult for them to be able to escape. You know,
yeah.
like you see this burning pile of cell phones. They can't call anybody. He's all the sled dogs in the whole town have been
mm-hmm.
slaughtered so that they can't get out and escape using their sled dogs, which is really interesting.
And also they showed that there's like one helicopter in town that has been like incapacitated.
Right.
And like parts of it have been thrown into like this weird grinder thing. I'm guessing that must be something to do with oil production.
Yeah, it was some like weird factory thing.
It was
it
more like this is where someone's
machine.
Gonna fall and get killed
later
eventually.
On. Yeah. Watch for it.
Yeah. Foreshadow alert.
Yeah. So all this stuff is happening in the town and he like you eventually see the stranger at this diner and he's like demanding raw hamburger.
I know
meat,
with like that
so
weird
icky.
Accent.
And yeah, he has the most bizarre accent. But you know what I liked about that is that it didn't seem like fake or put on.
Well,
you know
Ben,
what I mean?
Ben Foster has a tendency to always be better than the material he's
yeah.
doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Pandorum was a very average film,
mm-hmm.
but he stood
but
out
he
as being really
in
great in it.
Totally.
So he's always a little bit better than the material he has.
Yeah, and he gets very violent because they don't really want to give him his raw hamburger meat because they only have frozen patties or something like that because it's fucking Alaska in the
yeah.
middle of nowhere. And eventually Eben gets in there and has to sort of get him out and he doesn't want to leave. And he ends up arresting the stranger guy. And
with the help
him,
of Stella.
Yes, with the help of Stella and putting him into their little one cell jail.
They're a cosmopolitan jail.
Yeah.
Of...
And you learn that Eben has a younger brother and a grandmother who both like work at the sheriff's office.
And grandma's a stoner.
Yes. She has like what, glaucoma or something or cancer?
She has cancer.
Cancer.
It helps her with
yeah.
the cancer. And she has a little like growing facility
yes.
in her little
which
hobo
comes
shack.
In handy later. But not for the reasons you would think.
Yeah.
<I guess. laughs> Nobody's getting stoned in this movie.
Yeah. This is not 30 days of Dazed and Confused.
Nice one.
But I'm bunching.
Continue. Anyways, the stranger guy kind of like tells them a little bit about
like that cold you're feeling. And... it's not the cold, it's death, it's coming.
Yeah. And they're all freaked out. And anyways, things basically start to happen. You start seeing vampires, and they're like the creepiest vampires you've ever seen. But people start dying. And the town starts to kind of like close in on them. You know, it's like there are fewer and fewer people. Everybody's dying. And this small group of people that are kind of left over in the town have to figure out a way to survive this 30 days of night. So these vampires are really, really cool. The way that they look is just awesome. They don't speak English. They speak like this bizarre
vampiric or something
language.
Well, the deal is, like, apparently in order to make, they were concerned that the vampires would be less effective if they spoke English,
which I completely agree with.
They had this guy, because it was all shot in Alaska and New Zealand, and they had like this linguistics guy in New Zealand create a new language for them, and it's all like this very basic language, and it's built around basic needs like to eat and let's go
and God and
yeah like I mean like they're really basic sort of animalistic instinctual kind of things, which I think is important to talk about because when we get to the second movie it's much more sophisticated, but go ahead, continue. We'll get there.
Yeah. Anyway, so more and more of them start to be killed off, and you're seeing these, you know, these vampires are all like working together. It's like a big clan with a leader, and it's basically just like a giant feast for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they've come into this town and they can just sort of like kill whoever they want to and get away with it. Kind of.
Without the inconvenience of night.
Yes.
Yes. Or day.
Day.
Yes.
Day would be the inconvenience. Day would be the...
Shut up!
Anyways, so Eben basically gathers together all this, all the people in the town that he can. Unfortunately, like, his grandmother is killed pretty early on in the movie. But, you know, his little brother, Stella, and an older man and his son, and the older man's like senile.
He's got like some sort of dementia.
Yeah. This woman who runs the local diner, and
just like a little group of survivors.
Yeah. And this really cool guy who I love, who's like almost like Hagrid from like Harry Potter.
Well, that's Mark Boone Jr. That's what I'm talking about. He's great. He's sort of like, he's totally like the woolly mountain man, and he like lives out by himself. And there's this part earlier in the film before all like vampiric hell breaks loose. And, where he has, like, oil leaking out of his truck or whatever.
Yeah.
And Eben cites him. And Billy, his partner, is like, you know, like, he's a good guy. Bo's a good guy. Why didn't you just let him go? And he's like, hey, he lives all by himself out in the middle of nowhere. Getting a citation every once in a while reminds him that he's a part of this community.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he, you know, it'd be so easy for him to, like, go native out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yep.
Is that racist to say go native?
Yeah, kind of. But...
Is it considered, though? I mean, or is that like a...
I mean, in very PC circles, yes.
Okay.
But I think most of the time...
I never really thought about it. It just kind of clicked for me, and I'm like, this is a learning opportunity. I'm going to ask my PC friend.
I think most
friend.
Of the time you could get away with saying it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try not to say it anymore. But, okay, so go off the go off the reservation's bad, too, then, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so how can I say it in a way that's not, like, un-PC?
I don't know. I mean, in Alaska, they say, like, you know, you're going into the bush. They live in the bush, but I don't know.
But that's bad too, right? Because you're referring, I don't know, the bush, like, that's the same thing as, like, bush people, right?
I guess, but that's, like, actually, I mean, that's everybody, well, everybody that I met, almost everybody I met in Alaska was racist.
Go. So
that's really not the best example.
Okay, so what can we say? We could say, civilization challenged. I mean, I don't know, like, how to say that in a way that's not offensive. I'm trying to be a little more sensitive to, you know, like, we got, like, you know, like, five or six people that listen to the show. I don't want to offend one of them.
I'm not sure exactly how you would say that.
Okay, so anyways,
but I love that character because, like, he reminds me of the people that I got to hang out with in Alaska. Like, he is those people.
Yeah,
he's yeah, a great character. Anyway, so...
Those people. Wow. You heard it, folks.
Oh, my God.
It's a slippery slope.
Just fucking with you. Go.
Anyway, so they gather all these people up and they're trying to figure out how to survive. And they realize that there's this person in town who owns a house. And the house has this like crawl space attic. And it has a door that is in the ceiling. And like when it's closed, you can't even see that it's there. So they've like all the windows and doors have already been boarded up. So they basically sneak in and go up into this attic to hide. And they figure they can just sort of...
They kill some days at this point.
Right. Days pass by. And, you know, all they have to... They just, like, go down to use the bathroom and such. But it basically gets to the point where they realize they can't stay there any longer.
To me, this is kind of where in the movie things run a little off track for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because... I'm going to go back just a little tiny bit.
Sure.
Basically, when we meet all the cast of characters, for the most part, it happens in that, in the, like the sheriff's office.
Oh,
we've got the stranger who's like saying mysterious, creepy things in the jail cell, and Stella's there, and you're seeing the weird dynamic between her and Eben. And then also, you know, like she clearly has like a familiar relationship with the brother and
she's like very, very close to their family, but her and Eben are strained.
And you definitely, this is the point where you understand prior to their separating how she was a part of law enforcement there. They were kind of like, you know,
yeah.
And you understand her as a character and, you know, that she, I don't know. She definitely has that same sort of like hardiness, toughness to her. That all of these people do, just based on the fact that they live in this incredibly inclimate, you know, region of the, I don't know, the Arctic Circle or whatever.
You know what? I think it's really skillfully done, too, because they don't give you, like, a ton of exposition there. And they don't spend a lot of time on it. They don't even spend a lot of time in the beginning, like, just letting you kind of wander around the town and sort of see how it works. But just the little scenes and little bits that you get really paints a picture for you of how these people live and how they interact and the relationships that the main characters have to each other.
I think they do a good job of showing as opposed to telling.
Exactly.
You're not getting all of this information and exposition
so
much as you're just seeing the living conditions.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you're able to extrapolate how fucked up that would be and how tough you would have to be to choose to live in a part of the country or the part of the world like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and they even kind of at some point talk about like the people who live here because they can.
Yeah. But, yeah. And I mean, like, I'm such a freaking wimp. I spent 2 summers in Alaska.
And you're like, this shit's cold.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, I was in the middle of nowhere. I was staying in a little cabin that only had a little wood stove for heat. And even in the summer there, like, it gets really cold in the summer. Like, the hottest it would get would be like 65 or something. And at night, it gets really freaking cold, even though you only have about 2 hours of darkness. During the summer part that I was there for. You know?
Weird. I could not handle that.
It was very, very
hard
to get used
to. That would jack my sleep up. And I am a cranky, cranky bastard.
But the people that I met in this like little, you know, because there was like this little tiny town with just like one restaurant, one little tiny hotel, the VA bar.
I bet that shit was popping.
Yeah. And like a tiny hamburger joint that was in a bus. Like, they had taken a bus and, like, hollowed it out and turned it into a hamburger place.
Hilarious.
And that was, like, basically the entire town. Oh, and a little tiny gas station.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to see them. Yeah. You gotta bring them next time you come over.
Yeah, definitely.
But what I was gonna say is, at this point, obviously, you know, we talked a little bit about the stranger has started to cut the city off. Sorry, I don't mean to, like, cut in.
No.
But while they're in there, they lose internet and phone. And then basically they realize, so they decide to head out. Stella and Eben decide to head out across town or however. I'm having trouble picturing how big this place is. It looks so small, you know, but they have to head out of town to the power plant or wherever it is because all the emergency generators have had to kick in. They get out there and they discover that someone has, you know, tampered with it and ruined it or, you know, like killed the power. But they also find somebody's head on a pole.
Yeah.
And it's at this point that when they're heading back to town, is that correct? Are they heading back to town?
Yeah.
They see something and they get out of the car and Stella's like, get back in the car, get back in the car. And they get in the car and they start driving and one of the vampires jumps on.
Yeah, jumps on the back of the car. And
starts attacking the car. And it's this really, I mean, I don't know. I thought that was a really cool, intense scene.
It was, definitely. Because it's like all of a sudden, bam, vampire's there, you know?
I mean,
it was
also very effective. You get a sense of, like, the strength of the vampire.
Yeah. And, I mean, they're incredibly powerful.
Like what kind of monster we're dealing with. This is...
Yeah.
These
aren't the, like, romantic, sexy Dracula vampires.
No, they're definitely not hump-inspiring at all. So... But the reason I think it's important is because and this is something that for me was really effective, was they leave town, they shake off the vampire, and they come back into town, and by the time they get back, this little quiet town, which was just dark, but kind of like empty, and people were just like, whoa, what's going on, has now just been like it's like post-apocalyptic there.
Yeah.
Cars are flipped over and on fire. The streets are empty. There's blood in the streets.
Yeah. Like they do like this headless bodies places. And yeah,
they do this pan, and there's like, I mean, and what's so great about like winter horror is the mixture of blood and snow. Like it's so visually striking, like bodies like surrounded by blood in the snow in the short time it took them to drive out of town. So like now all hell is broken loose. And that's what's so great up until this point of the movie is that it's just like, it doesn't give you a second to breathe. Like they find the cell phones, the dogs get killed. Like, you know, I mean, it's.
Yeah,
like,
it's one thing after another. And you realize that, you know, they're already in this tiny town in the middle of nowhere, winter, 30 days of night, and then all of a sudden everything that they rely on to get them through that time period is completely cut off by these monsters. And that makes it like gives you this almost like claustrophobic,
it's that isolation,
like, yeah, completely isolated feeling that really like it plays on your, you know, your nerves and sense of like safety, you know.
There's like, there really is kind of no escape. There's no like technology there to help you if you try to get out. I mean you can't really even escape, because if they see you, they attack on sight. So these people really are completely cut off from all of the comforts, like you were saying, and they have to really rely on themselves to be able to survive, which is what I think is really cool about this movie. That there really is a sense of it's not just about like, you know, battling the vampires. It's about survival and relying on themselves, like the strength of themselves as these people who are just kind of innately tough.
Right. They don't just like go into somebody's house and they're like, oh, this person has a stockpile of weapons, let's go like kill all the vampires. No. It doesn't happen that way.
Which the thing about this, even though obviously we're talking about a vampire movie, so it's not like a realistic kind of thing, there is a sense of realism to this film that you don't necessarily get in a lot of other vampire things.
Yes, definitely.
There's, like I said, there's the survival aspect. There's the dealing with the cold, which is another, like, you know, serious, you know, like, it's another serious, it's another obstacle that they're facing.
Yeah.
It's almost like a villain in the movie, is, like, dealing with just the climate, right? But, and what makes the movie so horrifying in it, with its realism, is also kind of, works to the detriment of the film. Like the idea of the hopelessness that 30 days of night would cause in a situation like this also means you've got 30 days to burn off.
Yeah.
Before, between now and the conclusion. Like this, I think probably would have worked better as a mini series, because then you could have you could develop subplots during this time.
That's actually a really good point. It probably would have worked really well as a mini series.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the movie has to, you know, it has these scenes and then it has to cut, and you're like, you know, 10 days later, or like, you know, 15 days later. And that does in some ways work against it, but at the same time,
it slows the pace.
It definitely slows the pace down in the middle of the film, but, it also kind of makes you feel that hopelessness and the kind of almost like claustrophobic insanity that they must be going through, having to like stay in this little tiny space all clustered together,
walking across the roof.
Exactly. And you know, they look out this like little hole that they can tear in the window, that's all like sealed up, and every time they look out, you know, it's like they see the vampires out there. And
it's cool too. It also, I think one good thing though about it is that it kind of allows you to for the film to really focus on a couple of key, like, kills.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because mostly they're just people getting snatched up at first when the attack happens, and they pan back and show people in the streets with their heads getting ripped off and children getting their blood drink and all that good stuff. But by slowing down like this, it kind of allows you to focus on, like at one point there's a couple that gets attacked and they get pulled out and underneath their house and killed. And then there's another couple that like you get to see the vampires kind of play with their food almost, mm-hmm. Where, you know, like the scene most people have seen from like the commercials and the trailers where he's using his long nail to listen to the record where they kill the couple. And,
And then they show where they use like this girl as bait, yes. You know, I love that scene. They mm-hmm. make her, you know, walk across the town, in the main street, in the middle of the main street going like, help, is anybody out there?
Mm-hmm.
But, and so they all are like, you know, they hear her and they go to the window to see if they can help, but they see that all the vampires are on the rooftops across just like waiting for her. And that,
using her as bait.
Yeah, using her as bait. That was great.
Well, I think the reason it's so effective is it's not just the terror that the girl is feeling as she's walking through the town.
Yeah, it's the helplessness that they feel. They can't do anything. If they leave, they're going to be killed, and they know that.
And yet, she's not just some girl. This is a small town.
Yeah,
they've known her whole life.
Yeah.
And to just know that she's like, you know, basically dead woman walking.
Yeah.
But they, for the good of the group, you know, the group of people that are there, they can't really
do anything.
Yeah. And they just let her die. And it's a slow death too. They like, mm-hmm. they like scratch her face a bunch of time, cut her open before they finally kill her.
Yeah.
And it's also at this point where Eben has, they've come to the realization that they can't just stay in this attic for 30 days. They need supplies. They need some way to protect themselves. So they have to figure out a way to get to, they want to get to the supply store.
Yeah, like the little general store.
And then, I guess, to the sheriff's office?
Mm-hmm.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
So, which is where... So, they wait for a whiteout. They wait for a whiteout, and then they make their way to the general store, and they start, like, you know, like, stuffing all their bags and stuff.
Which is a great
and this scene. Is where we get, like, one of the, like, I mean, I don't know how much further we can go without talking about the tone of this movie and just like how grim it is.
Yeah.
Like I'd seen this movie. I've actually seen this movie. This is the third time I've seen this movie. I saw it in the theater and then I saw it once before. And then obviously I watched it again for the episode. And something I don't know why I keep forgetting is just really how bleak and grim and unflinching this movie is.
Yeah.
The level of gore in this movie is pretty intense.
Oh, so much gore, so much blood.
The blood, I mean, you know, as far as blood goes, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, they did such a good job with that. Such a good job.
The consistency of it, the color of it, like it, you know what I mean? Like it, there's blood and then there's blood. You know what I mean? And this, I think the blood in this is... The red stuff is good. It's really, really well made. Yeah,
they did a really good job. And, like, if you get the DVD, it has a bunch of little, you know, like, 10, 15-minute featurettes on some of the things that they did. And one of the things that they show is how they made the blood. And that they had, like, the specialists come in and, like, mix a bunch of different consistencies and colors, like, hundreds of them, of different kinds of blood so that they could... and then they like splattered it and painted it and stuff to figure out like what would be the best one. And they specifically wanted something that was like dark and thick because they thought that that would be like the most effective against the snow, and that the vampires too had like a different kind of blood because they were supposed to be, you know, not human anymore.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was really cool that they spent that much time and energy, and you didn't know that. And that was one of the things that like, you know, you pick up on is that it looks mm-hmm. great.
It was,
you know?
Time well spent.
Definitely.
And when we get to the next movie, the care and detail that they spent on the blood in this really stands out in comparison.
Oh, yeah. It's a stark contrast.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, I don't know. Like, it really does add to the film. I mean, let's face it. Like, we love gore. That's part of the horror experience. And I think it makes it much more satisfying when you're really able to buy into this visceral presentation of blood on the snow, blood being flying around. Also, you never get the sense that it's CGI. I mean, I don't know how much of it is and how much of it is practical, but
most of it was practical effects because they show like a feature on how they did a lot of the practical effects, and they made up you know, when the head gets like somebody's head gets like smashed,
really
in,
amazing.
And that's not CGI. Like they did that with practical effects. Awesome. The scene we're about to talk about with the little girl vampire, that was practical effects. So most of it that they were able to do with practical effects, they did do. Which it really, I mean, I love that, and it looks so good in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's like I said, there's a couple of beheadings in this that are, I mean, they're incredible. But
yeah,
that's because I think truly because for one thing, the camera held still long enough for me to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, like really in an unflinching way with that second beheading.
Yeah,
at the end, and also because of the practical effects. I mean, it's just you can't really get that same sense of like raw meatiness that you get from a practical effect. But
yeah,
anywho, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
So this is like one of the greatest scenes, and we've got them, you know, in this little store, and they're all grabbing up supplies, you know, Oreo cookies and then things that they actually need, when they hear noises in the back of the store, and it's a little girl you see is like eating, sucking the blood and like ripping out the throat of another person, like the person who ran the store or something. And it's this little girl, and she's like a little dress and bows in her hair. And then she turns around and she's got, you know, the face of a vampire and those dark eyes and the grisly teeth that they have. And then she just runs at them so quickly. I mean, it's a great scene, and they end up, I mean, she's attacking people. She bites one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to deal with the fact that one of them now is bitten later on. Yeah. But they have to kill this girl. I mean, they recognize that they can't. She's attacking them. And they hold her up against a wall and chop her head off with an axe. I mean, it's a grisly scene. And they, you know, they cut away from it a little bit. I mean, you basically see everything that happens there. And, and that's one of the things you're talking about. Like, a lot of horror movies and action movies these days, all the camera moves are so quick, and you don't get to really feel and see what's happening. In this movie, you really do.
Yeah.
And that's one of those, like, the most effective scenes. It always is, like, you know, Night of the Living Dead, when you see, like, the little girl zombie, that's always...
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. There is something about, like, the mixture of children and horror.
Yeah.
As long as they're not too overly precocious.
Right, which can be really obnoxious.
Yeah, then it's one of those things that just sort of, like, instinctually, like, tugs at your heartstrings. You can't help it.
Definitely.
At this point, is this where they hook up with Billy?
Yeah.
I think we might have this might be slightly out of chronological order. But
at some point, they make their way to Billy's house. And we meet Billy earlier on. He's like the deputy sheriff in the town.
He's a family man.
Yeah, family man. He's got a wife and kids. He's like best friends to Eben and his wife Stella. He's the one trying to sort of get them back together. And they go to his house because
they see him flashing a light.
So they go over to his house, and they find him in his home, and he's been there by himself with his family for this entire length of time. And it's a really long time at this point.
I think we're at like 17 days or something.
Yeah, and I mean, you can imagine being in a house and having vampires surround you and everybody's dying and being stuck in this home. And he doesn't think he's ever going to get out. So he has made the decision before they get there to kill his family.
Yeah.
Eben walks into the room and he sees in his bed, a sheet over the top of what looks like his wife and two or three children. And I mean, the look on Eben's face of like, what did you do? The horror. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Cause that, you know, they never show, them dead under the covers. You just see Eben and Billy's reaction, and he had planned to like kill himself as well, but couldn't do it.
The gun had jammed.
Yeah. The gun had jammed. Right. And then he decided to finally like get their attention, because he just couldn't deal with being
there
alone
anymore. Yeah,
he just couldn't do it. And even though he knew that he was like risking their lives to have them come get him, he just couldn't deal with it anymore. So one of the things that's really cool is that even though Eben is like totally disgusted with him for doing what he did, he takes him under his wing and like brings him in as part of the group to protect him and save his life.
I think part of that is the friendship, but part of it also is him as,
the leader of the group, yes. as a law enforcer, you know what I mean? Yes. As sort of like, he kind of has to, he's the one that's keeping the group together. He's kind of has to be the moral compass of the group.
Yeah.
He's the one that's preventing the fights and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, this basically takes us into the final act of the film.
Yeah.
Where they end up basically, I don't know what the facility is called, but it's basically the oil facility, whatever.
Yeah, we'll just
where they
that.
Make the oil go. Okay. That's what it's called. The oil go machine thingy that has the meat grinder on it for yes. some unknown reason. If somebody out there knows about oil rigs or whatever, let me know what the purpose of this thing is. But, so they go there and Billy follows along with them and attracts the attention of one of the vampires. He's kind of the one that you probably associate most with this movie because, I don't know, like he's the one that's always on all the posters and stuff. And I think it's because, God, the effects, the CGI effects on his face. That's one thing in the film.
The lead vampire.
This yeah. is a perfect example. The Splattercast just sent out this like horror poll. It's like the SATs of horror, basically. And one of the questions on there that, and I'm not trying to give away anything, but like there's a discussion of CG and like mm-hmm. whether or not, you know, it works or whatever, and is a good part of the horror genre. But this is an example of where I think CGI does something that practical effects can't really do. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to something we talked about last time too, that uncanny valley thing.
Yeah.
Like they've had their faces distorted with CG. So they've got the black eyes and the shark teeth as opposed to like, you know, the typical fangs.
Right. And I love those teeth. I mean, they're
monsters. Yeah, it takes them back to monsters. There's something that's been romanticized about like the incisors, like
yeah, and sexualized.
And... yeah. And but with these, there's like nothing sexy about it. It's like they're like shark teeth. They're like demon teeth or something. They're monster teeth. You know what I mean? Like there's no animal in that those are similar to that are not considered scary or monsters right, or whatever. Right. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing sexy about the teeth. But then they've also done something to like warp their face and their eyes. Like yeah.
It's something to like their forehead and their noses.
Tilted their eyes.
Something.
Yeah, like in this weird, I don't know.
It's like you can't even put your finger on it, but they don't look human but it's not such a drastic change.
It's like a perversion
either.
Of their face.
Yeah. And it never looks like phony CGI. I mean, they did a really good job on it. A really good job.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I just love the way these vampires look. I mean, it's totally different than anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
And it's chilling and so effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it adds to it the way they speak to each other, too. The way
and
they
that
communicate.
Guttural vampire
language.
Yeah,
very
language.
Guttural. Ugh.
Yeah, it's really creepy.
Very.
The vampires in this, I mean... Well, I think we'll probably, when we're done with the synopsis, kind of go more into it. But yeah, no, he's very effective. He follows them in there and we have sort of like a showdown where he ends up fighting with Billy and fighting with Eben. And they successfully shove him into the meat grinder, which we all knew would happen.
Yes.
And it's pretty cool.
It is very cool.
That's CG, that part right there. Yeah. But Billy gets his hand caught in the meat grinder. That shit was nasty.
Oh my God, no kidding.
Super effective. Like the bone sticking out and blood spurting. Totally amazing.
Blah.
Like total like arterial blood spray. Oh, so gross. But awesome at the same time. It was like one of those moments where I was watching with the laces of my fingers over my eyes, but you know, couldn't quite look away. And he's been bitten and it's starting to turn.
Yeah.
So it's left, which is, God, it's such a mercy killing. Like, if there ever was a mercy killing, this is it. He's, like, screaming in agony at this
because
blood
it's painful
pumping
when they start changing.
Out of his hand.
Yeah.
And he's changing, and Eben just goes to work with an axe on his neck.
Yeah.
That is the gnarliest decapitation I think I've ever seen.
Because it's not one smooth blow.
Other decapitations and that I think is the gnarliest one I can at least that I've seen. I mean, I'm sure probably there's worse than Saw and Hostel and stuff, but anyway.
Yeah. But and that's one of the things about this movie is like that's the second time Eben had to do that. Like there's that other scene where he's I think they're in the general store or something and
they've made it to the sheriff's
office. Yeah, and he has to like go into this back room and like kill, you know,
that's such an emotional moment though.
Yeah.
Like one of the guys who's been kind of consistently one of the more likable people in the group, was accidentally bitten in the general store by the little vampire girl that they behead, the little brother beheads. And he tells the story about how, you know, his wife and kids aren't with him, not because they just hadn't come, but because they actually had died and he just couldn't bring himself to tell the group. And he knows that he's changing. He can feel the change. He can smell their blood or whatever. And, but the idea of living forever and never being able to
be with them, again.
Yeah. You know, he like begs Eben to kill him. And in this case, they decided to leave it to your imagination to a certain extent. It was definitely much more of an emotional moment in the film.
You hear it, but you don't see anything. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring that up is just because there's like, you know, Eben has to do that in that scene. His little brother has to kill the little girl.
Yeah.
You know, they have to watch as this woman is used as bait. You know, he has to kill his best friend. It's like all these scenes where these people who, you know, they care so much about, they either have to kill them or watch them just be, you know,
it's grim.
Killed and not be able to do anything about it. Yeah, it's very, very grim.
Like, you know, a lot of times.
Bleak, very bleak.
Part of, you know, with vampire films and horror films in general, there is sort of an escapism to them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very much rooted in reality.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. The horror comes from, like, obviously a fan, like, you know, a supernatural or fantastical source. But the way that you're feeling it and the way that it's presented are very, they're like very realistic
mm-hmm.
emotions and responses. And it's such like a long, painful, like slide into Suckville that you really kind of like go on this emotional roller coaster so that when it gets to the end and Eben makes the choice that he does, you can kind of buy into it. Whereas if you hadn't, I don't think that ending would have been able to get on board with it.
Yeah.
Basically, like, through this process, this wife that he loved, that he separated from, and, like, you know, they're clearly, like, they were at the end of their relationship had this not happened. It's not that they've even rekindled it so much as, which would be pretty cliche. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they appreciate it at, like, more, the relationship that they had and
the love that they had.
Like, really understood mm-hmm. that, you know, in the face of losing it. I don't know how to really explain it.
Yeah, because they don't have these, like, long, drawn-out scenes of them, like, looking into each other's eyes and saying, oh, I love you so much. There's not that cliched moment. But, you really see that they care deeply about each other. And this horrible experience has sort of made them see that.
Yeah, it's sort of, like, intensified in a very raw way, the relation, like the bond that they had and kind of had lost. So basically what's happened is Stella has been separated from the group. She's in a situation where if she comes out from hiding, he's kind of left with, if she stays where she's going to be, the burning oil that the vampires have let loose to burn down the town and protect
destroy all evidence that they were ever there.
And protect their secret. Because they're like, you know, it took us hundreds of years to make the humans believe we were just a nightmare. You know, so we have to cover our tracks, basically. Eben kind of sacrifices himself. He infects himself with the vampire virus or whatever it is and confronts the vampires and, you know, defeats Marlowe and the vampires basically
disband. Once their leader is killed. And it's a great scene when Eben turns too.
Yeah.
I mean, he injects himself. He doesn't just like, you know, drink the blood or something. Like, he injects it into his veins like a heroin addict or something. And then you see his eyes slowly turn black and like, he's like, I mean, it looks like it's incredibly painful, this change, too. It's really, really cool.
It's sort of like a Wolfman transformation, almost.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And at the end of the film ends with him and Stella sitting together and watching the sunrise, and then him basically burning up in the sun.
Yeah, well, she, like, holds him to her chest.
So it's a very bleak ending to a very grim film.
Yeah, like, I had seen this movie in the theaters, and when I was going to watch it again, I asked my dad, like, hey, do you want to watch this with me? And he's like, are you kidding me? He's like, do you remember how bleak that movie was? I do not want to watch that again. But he really, really liked it the first time, but he just couldn't deal with, like, watching that emotional, like, you know, desolate. Ugh,
yeah. Kind of, I mean, it's a rough go.
Yeah. But I think it's well worth it.
Yeah. I know that some people don't like this movie. It's definitely a divisive.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I mean, I personally liked it. And here's why. It's a very rare, not since Nosferatu, basically, mm-hmm. have you seen a vampire movie where the vampire is, like, strictly a monster. He's not a monster, like, a sexy monster that, you know, like, is charismatic and you're drawn to, even though it's dangerous and lethal. Like, yeah. These are legit monsters. They're frightening. They're animalistic. They're like, I mean, this is more of a monster film than a vampire film. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely. And I'd never seen anything like that before. And that's one of the reasons why I like it so much. It's such a different take on the Dracula vampire story that we've seen so many times before. There's nothing about this movie and these vampires that I've seen before.
Yeah. And I know, like, last week when we were, or last time we were all together, Lisa was saying that they're like, they look like they're wearing Hot Topic. I don't know. I guess. I mean, they're wearing black, but I felt like, I don't know, I loved the vampire design. I didn't really notice what they were wearing.
I didn't either,
really. I was too busy looking at their faces and their teeth, you know?
Yeah.
And
the way they move and jump and all
but
that.
But they also really kind of recaptured, like, the sense of mystery with a vampire that you don't really have. It's something similar to, have you read The Strain or The Fall? It's a trilogy of vampire film or vampire books that Guillermo del Toro is writing with this writer Chuck Hogan.
No, I haven't.
And, like, it's the same kind of thing, mm-hmm. where it's not that they're not intelligent, but they're monsters.
Right.
There's nothing sexualized about them.
Yeah.
And it's very, I don't know. I just think it kind of sets itself apart from other vampire films, like, from the subgenre, and sets itself kind of above a lot of them by being, like, horror first, you know what I mean? Being, like, a legit horror film with gore and with suspense and fear, like, you know, like, it's frightening, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really, really love this movie, and that's a big reason. Like you were saying, there's some parts in the middle that slow down a little bit. And
there's some pacing issues in the middle of the film.
Yeah, definitely. But I wholeheartedly, like, bought into this movie and its backstory and, like, the way these vampires are. It just, to me, it was scary on the level of these being these horrific monsters.
Yeah.
But also the closed in, isolated, bleak feeling that you get from where they are and the situation that they're in because of being in, you know, this town in Alaska. Like, that adds to it too. And that's just why I like this movie so much. It's because just the way it makes you feel throughout the whole movie. There are moments that, you know, are really scary, and that there are moments that are, like, you know, you feel this, like, gut-wrenching sort of pain for these characters, and in a way that I haven't seen in a vampire movie before.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. It's not just, you don't get the sense that they're just a body count.
Like, yeah,
you legitimately are concerned for their well-being. They're very human, very flawed in the way that humans are. But, like, for instance, like, the father with dementia, when he gets out and you're like, you know, the son's a goner. You know, and you're feeling for him, you know what's going to happen, but, like, you, like, legitimately are emotionally invested and are sad to see the, you know,
yeah, and you understand, like, the decision that he makes going after his father and not just letting him perish, even though he knows
does, though. It's a wrap.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, like, the son knows that he's going to die, too, but he can't not go after his father.
Yep. So, overall, I actually really like this movie a lot.
Me too.
It's not something I want to watch back to back because, like we said, it's emotionally pretty exhausting. But I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, me too. I would really, really highly recommend it. And from like the little featurettes that I saw too, you really get a sense that they put a lot of time and energy into conceptualizing the vampires and all of the fight scenes and the language that the vampires speak. They spend a lot of time on the way the film looks. It has this very, mm-hmm. you know, gritty, realistic, cold look to it. I mean, you feel
it looks
the
really
cold.
Good too, considering it was shot day to night.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Usually you can spot that a mile away.
Yeah,
and I didn't.
I mean, they did. They said that it was like really hard to shoot because they did so many. They had like this schedule of just shooting at the nighttime for so long, and that they all had to like reverse their sleeping schedules, and that was like really hard. They all looked like they were kind of going insane by the end of
it. I bet.
Yeah.
Which probably, you know. Okay. So let's give it one of our ratings. Buy it, rent it. What is it? Buy it, rent it. Skip it.
Yeah. For me, I would say it's such a good movie that I would say buy it, except that I don't know that it's the type of movie that you could see like over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But I loved it.
Yeah. I'm going to say buy it. I think it's something I'm going to want to watch every few years.
That's a good point.
It's definitely something that I would recommend to other people, that I would show to other people. But you have to be in the right mood. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to be in the right mental state. You got to be in the mood. But it's something good to watch around Halloween, I think.
Oh, yeah. And it's well worth the money. I mean,
it's a good winter horror. Really,
yeah.
All right. So that's it for 30 Days of Night. Are you ready to move on to its sequel?
Yes.
Okay. So the next up, we're going to talk about 30 Days of Night, Dark Days.
Good evening. I'm Stella Olson, survivor of Barrow. Last year, when the sun set for 30 days, our town came under siege by a clan of vampires. I've rigged the ceiling with ultraviolet lights. If there are any of you out there, I suggest you stand and show yourselves.
I'm a vampire.
Hit the lights.
Stella thought she was the only survivor, but she's about to discover there are others, and they're seeking revenge.
We know what it's like waking up in the night, your heart pounding.
Which is why we've been out there hunting them.
And we could use a fourth.
Lilith orchestrates everything. She keeps them organized. She keeps them secret.
They're planning another siege. Darkness is going to ascend again.
We only have 3 days.
If it take her out, the entire network falls apart.
I never wanted a war. I just wanted people to know what happened here.
You're planning on just walking in there and killing her?
Yes. You got big guns, sweetheart.
Can you tell me where they are?
Dark Days. Coming soon to Blu-ray and DVD.
Okay, so 30 Days of Night, Dark Days is directed by Ben Katai, K-E-T-A-I, however you want to pronounce that. I didn't recognize anything else he had done, except for he did, if you have Fearnet on demand. There's a few 30 Days of Night like short features, and he directed some of those. It's starring Kelly Sanchez as Stella, who is the Stella from the first film, who we pick her story back up after the events in Barrow. Reese Coro as Paul, Dora Baird as Amber, who people I think will recognize mostly from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the new... Let's see. Harold Perrineau as Todd, who most people know as the most annoying character on Lost ever. Michael. It's my son. Gotta find my son. Looking for my son.
I didn't even know that reference.
Dude, that's all he says. Seriously, that's all he says the whole time. When Walt gets kidnapped, he's like, "It's my son. You know, I gotta find Walt. Walt, it's my son." It's so annoying. Ugh.
Anyways, and then also stars Mia Kirshner as Lilith, which, by the way, is the most played out name ever in horror.
Stop it. Never is anyone allowed to use that name again.
Never, unless you're actually talking about Lilith from the Bible.
Yeah.
Or is that even in the Bible? It's not in the Bible.
No, it's like, but it's Adam's first wife.
You know? Yeah. If we're talking about that Lilith, cool. Otherwise, no more Lilith.
Yeah.
It's just so, it's such a cliche. I hate it.
I know.
Surprisingly, the screenplay was written by Steve Niles. And the reason I say surprisingly is that it's based very loosely on the sequel to 30 Days of Night, 30 Days of Night, Dark Days. He did another series of comics based on that. But according to the Wikipedia that I read, it's very, very different. It has the same exact ending, but all the stuff leading up to it is, like, she goes to LA and stuff, but it's very different.
Which is very surprising. I mean, we'll talk about why we don't like this movie so much in a few minutes, but I just find that surprising that somebody who made the comic, like, would write a screenplay that is so different and isn't.
Well, we probably got a lot of notes from people. Yeah. You know? Notes. Yeah. You know how that goes. The other thing is that it also has Ginger from Ginger Snaps in it, but she has, like, a really, like, unimportant. I wonder how much of that character ended up on the cutting room floor. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, why do you cast her, someone who has some war cred, and then really, truly not use her?
Yeah.
She has, like, one line. It's weird. But okay. You want to break down the synopsis?
No, go for it. I did the I'll cut in.
All right. I don't really remember it that well, but okay. Even though we'll just watched this today.
That's because it's not super memorable.
it's very, like, high concept, you know, but there's just really not that much to it. Okay. Yeah. So the movie takes place after the events in Barrow. It's like a year later. The community has rebuilt itself, but Stella has never been able to get over what happened with Evan, which to me, I have a problem with that because I feel like it's so counter to the character that we got to know in the first movie. But whatever, we'll get to that later. So she basically, I guess she's been getting some sort of correspondence from someone named Dane, and it leads her to going to LA. And
yeah, but basically, she's been so, like, traumatized by the events of Barrow and wants people to know and understand what's happened that she's been, like, going around the country, like, speaking, like, telling people that, you know, this is what really happened. It wasn't an oil spill, that, you know, vampires came and killed us all.
Yeah. And she does, like, one of her public speaking events, and she's like, is anyone out there a vampire? And there's, like, all these, like, goth kids, like, I'm a vampire! And she's like, well, I just want to let you know, I've set up these lights that are like the sun, and if you're a vampire, you're going to get burnt. And she turns them on, and then the vampires get burnt.
Which I love, right? First, that they're sitting there listening to her speech, and second, that she says that she's going to do it, and they don't get up, they just sit there and let themselves burn. It's like, what the fuck? Come on.
So she burns up the vampires, and she ends up getting taken into custody by this FBI agent who has, like, tuberculosis or something. I don't know what the fuck
that is. It's so gross.
I really don't. I mean, like, really, is he supposed to have TB?
Yeah. Well, he's supposed to have, like, lung cancer or something.
Lung cancer.
That's what I would assume, because you see him, like, coughing up blood at certain points.
Okay, because I was, like, to me, I just kept thinking of, like, Val Kilmer in Tombstone. I was like, is he going to be my Huckleberry? I don't understand. Why is he coughing up blood? So, and he's just like, you know, it's a publicity stunt, blah, 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 blah. But then you come to realize that he is like the stranger is someone who's assisting the vampires. So she gets out and she gets back to her hotel room, and she's approached by this group of people, which include, I want to call him Michael, but Harold Perrineau, whose character is, let me look at my notes. Okay. Todd, as well as Doria Baird, and, like, all the characters, whatever. And they're like, we're all like you. We've lost people to vampires. We believe you. We hunt vampires. So, you know what would have been awesome is if at that point the Frog Brothers jumped out. We could have had a 30 Days of Night and Lost Boys crossover. It would be awesome. Yeah. So, anyways, the Frog Brother knockoffs and her joint are, like, they're all hanging out, like, telling their sad sob stories, and a vampire comes and knocks on the door. They open the door and shoot his face off with a bunch of really bad CG,
And
it was really bad.
Really bad CG.
Like, the CG throughout this movie is you know, so awful.
Bad. And the blood is so bad. Yeah. So, okay. So she takes off with them, and Doria Baird's like, I don't like you. You're going to get us killed. And,
yeah, she's like a snotty. Yeah, she's not really likable. Who's like, she's totally unlikable. This woman has done really nothing to, like, lead her to believe that she's going to get them killed. But she's like, yeah, it's going to get us killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it's clear that she's, like, that character.
Yeah.
So they go to this other, they take her to, like, a safe house. And someone knocks on the door. And they open the door. And it's, dun, 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 a vampire. But don't worry, it's a good one.
It's Dane.
Thus ruining the whole, like, 13 days of night scary, inhuman, monstrous vampires. Because now we have, like, you know. We have the bub of vampires to help them out.
And the unfortunate thing about this is the CGI on their face is gone.
It's yeah.
He All they have are the contact. Black eyes. Yep. They even like, you know, like the black eyes aren't even done as well. Cause like when they look to the corner, like you see white and stuff. It's really unfortunate. They don't look scary and they speak English.
Yeah. He speaks English and the teeth have changed too. Whereas in the first one, they're like these jaggedy shark teeth. Now they're this like row of pointy, like needle teeth, which I mean, it's fine, but it's
not as effective.
It's clear that they're like, they've got like those vampire teeth in, you know what I mean? Whereas the other one looked, they look kind of like legit.
They did. And they kind of stuck out and their lips kind of had to like go around them when they closed their mouths in the first movie, which was really creepy looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they like had demon mouths or something. And now they just have like these little, like little needle teeth, but whatever. I realize I'm nitpicking, but I'm just pointing out the differences and the inferiority, but whatever. So she freaks out. Then she's like, oh no, he's a friendly vampire. And they decide...
Wait, but he proves that he's a friendly vampire because she wants to know, like, how he feeds, right? So he has, like, a refrigerator full of, you know, A, B, and O positive blood. And he, like, pours it out into a glass for her to see. And this is where you realize, like, just that they spend absolutely no time on the effects in this movie because it looks like grape juice.
They're like, you know what looks like blood? Welch's grape juice.
Yeah.
It's juicier. So he drinks this glass of grape juice. And the plan that they come up with this group of vampire hunters and Dane is that they need to track down the queen of the vampires, Lilith, who basically keeps them organized and keeps their keeps them a secret and just basically is, you know, queen.
Yeah, she decides what they're gonna do and they figure she's got to be in LA for a reason and they need to stop her.
Yeah, and if they kill her, then you know, the other vampires will be unorganized. I'm not really sure how that really feeds into like what their goals, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, let's like in the first movie it made sense that like, there weren't a ton of the vampires left, and so when their leader was killed, and, like, it was almost, like, then in a few hours, sun was gonna come up, it made sense that they all disbanded,
but
in this sense, like, when there's hundreds of these vampires, supposedly, or whatever.
And they're also, he's a vampire, too, now, so it's not, but we'll get to that. Anyways, so, somehow they get their hands on a vampire. Ariel and I have discussed it. We've gone off air, discussed it, and come back. We literally watched this movie 2 hours ago. We cannot remember how it happened, but they get a hold of this vampire. And rather than just kill him, she's like, let's keep him. I think they, like, injured his leg or something. So they take him back, and they start questioning him about Lilith, where she is, like, trying to get information out of him. And when he doesn't talk, she burns him with the lamp, and, he basically tells Dane in vampire language that they're planning to go back to the Arctic Circle for another feast, like they did with Barrow. They've got, like, their vampire ship there. So weird. So, and it totally reminded me of Resident Evil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How they have, like, the zombie ship?
Yes.
This is a vampire ship. So, so they decide to let him go and follow him back to the nest.
Yeah, because he's told them that, like, they don't, only Lilith knows the exact town in the Arctic Circle that they're planning to feast upon. So they need to get to her, obviously.
So they follow him back, follow her back, him back to a nest. and they save this girl who tells them about this ship where, you know, they keep all these people on the ship and sometimes they feed off them, sometimes they drain them, sometimes they, you know, take them out wherever they have to go so they have something to eat. And they set her free, and after she takes them to the ship where they assume Lilith must be because, you know, she's going to be with the vampires going for the feast. Yes. And they get on the ship. And that's where they find the Texas Chainsaw Massacre vampire edition, where there's like people hanging from hooks being bled, and then there's like people in like these draining funnel things.
Where they and, like, cut them and they're just like dripping blood into.
And there's something. Like an old lady on a hook that's like, "Kill me." They don't though, because they're assholes, I guess. And by the way, throughout this whole movie, they're using like machine guns and like combat shotguns and stuff. Like, they're really clearly not concerned about the fact that when they're in these nests that they're like making a metric fuck ton of noise, which is something totally different from the first film, which is all about like stealth and being quiet and you know, really the only way that they're able to survive is by going undetected. Whereas this, they're just, like, busting in there, like...
Yeah, they each have, like, one gun, and they're just gonna, like, go at it. And there's only, like, you know, three or four of them. And they're like, we can defeat this nest. We've done it before, and...
Yeah. You know. So, eventually, of course, the vampires find them, and, like, they fight the vampires, and it gets down to Stella versus Lilith, because formula demands. Mm-hmm. And, spoiler alert, Stella outwits the vampire and kills Lilith with this really, really pathetic CGI beheading.
Yeah, it was super pathetic.
And along the way, she's discovered that if you feed vampire to a burnt up or blood to a burnt up vampire, you can bring them back to life. So she goes back to Barrow, she digs up her dude.
Digs up her man.
Digs up her dude. Cuts her arm and bleeds all up in his mouth and shit. And he comes back to life, and the film ends with him biting her. And that's... Ooh, what a twist. So, basically, in a nutshell, that is 30 Days of Night, Dark Days. Shall we with the critique?
Yeah.
You want to start it or want me to?
Well, I mean, there are some basic things. We've talked about already that, you know, the blood doesn't look as good. The vampires... do not look as good. No. They're not as scary.
No.
It doesn't have
there this... is no tension, no
suspense, tension at all.
No atmosphere.
No, that doesn't have the same gritty look, that same bleakness. There's nothing about it. They have a few jump scares that do absolutely nothing for you. I found myself, you know, bored throughout it, where I'm like, I don't even really care to pay attention to what's happening. Yeah. Like, it really was just kind of boring.
Yeah. I mean, it was better than The Descent, too.
Very. Yeah, that's a very, very good
but
point.
Barely.
Yeah. There, you know, there was nothing about it that was, like, claustrophobic, or it didn't have that end of the world feeling to it that the first one kind of gave
it
you.
It felt very low rent, and I'm not even against, like, low budget films.
No, I'm not either. Not at all.
But when you don't have a ton of budget, you have to make up for it with atmosphere and characters that are, you know, you identify with, that you care about, and you didn't get any of that there. It was just, it felt like an empty set with, I don't know, it just felt very low rent.
Yeah, I mean, the acting is not very good. When they have their little, like, monologues or whatever, it's uncomfortable sometimes because the dialogue is poorly written.
Yeah.
In the first one, like we said, there wasn't a ton of exposition, but you really got a sense of who these people were, the lives that they led. You really felt for them when these terrible things were happening to them. There was none of that in this movie. I could have really cared less when one of them died or was bitten.
I think part of the problem was, in the first film, you know, you were really concerned about the people because they were just basically average Joes. They had the capabilities of any other person, you know? Whereas in this, they're kind of like stylized vampire hunters. Like, there's a little bit of like the Blade influence in this, or the Resident Evil influence in this. And now, don't get me wrong, I like Blade and I like Resident Evil, but it just doesn't capture the same kind of tension or the same kind of realism that the first film did. you know, because now they've got these big fat guns and, you know, they're bringing the fight to them in a way that is not strategic or relying on like their survival skills. It's just very like by the numbers kind of action horror.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what else really bothered me was like, even with these vampires, like, the way they spoke was different, too.
Yeah.
Like, the language was different. It wasn't different.
Guttural anymore. Like, no. Lilith spoke very, like, melodiously.
Yeah. And that's what I was about to talk about. Like, the first movie, we've said over and over again that there was nothing romanticized or sexualized about these vampires. Lilith is overly sexual throughout mm-hmm. the whole movie. And that kind of bothered me a little bit. Like, it didn't really work for me.
Well, it removes sort of the originality that you got from the first film. Also, the first film, you saw the vampires, like, crawling animalistically from rooftop to rooftop. Yep. Very predatorial. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
And in this, they just look like stunt people.
Yeah. Totally. Know, like, they just, like, walk around like normal people. And she's, like, this vampirist, you know? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
She, you know, with her like black dress uh-huh. and the way that she moves and like just the sexual overtones with when she's interacting with all the different, you know, vampires and that human guy who's like obsessed with them and is dying from lung cancer or TB mm-hmm. or whatever. And it didn't work for me at all. And actually kind of bothered me because it kept like bringing me out of the movie.
Yeah.
And making me like want more of what the first movie was.
Well, I think also it removes sort of the mystery of the vampires in the first one. Like, they were just this, like, these vicious animalistic monsters that appeared mm-hmm. on this, like, ominous ship in the middle of nowhere to, like, now this, in this case, they really are, like, Hot Topic rejects. Like, they don't work the same way in an urban setting. Like, no, they you don't. Know, they just kind of have become, I mean, it really is, this movie fits more in terms of the vampires, except for their teeth. And it fits within, like, the Blade universe.
Yeah, and like you were saying, there's such this, like, instinctual animal element to the vampires in the first movie. And here, you know, like you were saying, they've got people up on hooks, they're draining them from blood, they're doing like medical type experiments, and uh-huh. it really, like, you don't get that same frightening feeling from them anymore.
There also isn't the same kind of like unflinching brutality.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, they just kind of like were like vampire posers.
Yeah, they were jokes, really.
Yeah. But there was just like a bestiality to the, and like they were like true predators in the first film. Whereas in this movie, they were definitely much more of what we associate with as just sort of the modern vampire.
Yep.
Like your run of the mill modern vampire. They just have fancier teeth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It was really a disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly could have been worse. The production values for a direct-to-video were pretty good. Obviously, the blood was pretty lame. The CGI was pretty lame. But it's kind of what you expect
from a direct-to-video. Yeah, you know, they didn't have as much money to work with. I get that.
But I will forgive some bad CG if you give me, like, some meat with the plot and with the characters. But, like, you know, Melissa George, maybe not the best actor out there, but she certainly showed like a level of vulnerability and depth that, you know, this Kelly Sanchez just really, I mean, she just really didn't.
Yeah. No, I mean, none of the actors did a great job, really. Like, I just, they were forgettable. And the plot was extremely forgettable. Like, I mean, we already forgot it. there just wasn't much there. There wasn't much to the characters. There wasn't much to the dialogue. There wasn't much to the plot.
Yeah. You know? And it's a shame because it, to me, 30 Days of Night works totally by itself, but mm-hmm. it also has the potential to be, like, a legit franchise.
Yeah.
You know, like, there is, if, like, they could have done something like Lilith, or Marlowe, had Marlowe, like, Marlowe could have been, like, a really great horror character.
Oh, definitely.
If developed a little bit more and given a little, you know, like, a little more time to do his thing. Like, he really wasn't really, like, intimidating, frightening frightening character, frightening monster. But, you know, it just, I don't know. It just, it did not work for me.
Yeah, no, not at all.
It just, it really felt like 30 Day, it felt like Blade. Felt like a Blade movie. I know I've said that, but like that's the best way I can describe it. It's like a
knockoff.
It's like a Blade without sort of the humor and the style.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I would say is there anything else you want to talk about with this movie?
No.
Should we give it our ratings? Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear. Go ahead. What's your rating?
Skip it.
Yeah. Skip to rent. Skip to rent.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose like it's like, not as laughably horrible as The Descent 2 was.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see like if, you know, you're looking for something, you know, easy, you don't need to pay a lot of attention to. If you can get it for free, maybe watch it.
Yeah, like if you catch it on like Fearnet or something.
Yeah, it might be, you know, worth one watch. But there are so many horror movies out there that
there's better stuff out there. There's much better stuff. It's passable. There are worse ways to spend your time, but it certainly is not the equal of its predecessor. No,
not even close.
In any way. Not even
close.
And, you know, it's whatever. Usually, like, if there's, like, a tough lead female character, you can count on me to be on board.
Oh, yeah, totally. But
they didn't give me anything with this
one. Yeah, there was nothing for you to, like, really grab onto.
All right, so that's basic. I'm going to go with you. We already discussed that, so I'm moving on. I'm repeating myself, which I always do. I have to cut, like, myself. I say things, like, four times. I have to, like, cut. I have to go in and, like, I'm like, oh, I said it again. Cut it. Okay, so moving on. Are you ready to move on to the next topic?
Yes.
All right. Well, this is the part in the podcast where I get to turn the reins over to you because we're going to talk a little bit about
News.
What are the ladies of horror up to?
Okay, well, this was like the first thing that I saw and I thought was kind of cool because it was a movie that I really liked. The Host. They're doing a second version of it, and it's going to be like a 3D movie, which
of course,
like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not going to come out till like sometime in 2012, but I really liked The Host, mm-hmm. the first one. I mean, it was sort of like a new take on that old Japanese monster movie kind of thing. And
you know, I actually owned that movie.
Really?
I never made it through the whole thing. I had a little trouble with the tone. Like, it was a little it was a little schizophrenic to me. Like, you know, it's like one minute it's horror, but then it's also like this wackadoo kind of.
Yeah, like, I guess I can kind of see that. I just had fun with it. Like, I had fun with that movie.
Is that what I was going to ask was, does that kind of stay the tone throughout the movie, or is that more just like the beginning so you're kind of getting to know the characters?
Yeah, kind of. Okay. I mean, I don't think it's that bad the whole way. I don't think that's
because there's like the blonde dude that's like, I don't know, it's like, what is Jim Carrey doing in this movie? What is Asian Jim Carrey doing? I don't understand, you know. That was my, but everybody loves it, so I'm like, what am I missing?
I really think that you should just like, we've watched a lot of bad movies. Just true like that. Sit down and watch it and see, you know, maybe it's not for you. Maybe it's not. But yeah. I really enjoyed it. I watched it with my brother and like he really loved it too. And he like went out and bought it. And stuff.
Everybody
really
loves it. That's why I'm like, what's the deal? Like what? I don't want to miss out on something good. I really don't. I'm open to it. But the problem was, is it just kept pulling me out of, I was trying to like, you know, surrender to it and be like, get into it. And I just kept going like, stop it. Just stop it.
Well, maybe, you know, drink a couple beers or something so it doesn't bother you so much.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to give it all. If it's really good, I'll try it again. But I'm just saying that's why I haven't finished it yet. Even though it's like sitting, I have it on, I think I even have it on Blu-ray. I just haven't.
Okay, and then we were talking about this earlier, which I think is, like, really cool, but the title just, like, cracks me up so much. Robopocalypse.
Doesn't that sound like it would be, like a, I don't know, like, it would be, like, a little side skit thing that they do in Family Guy or, like, on Futurama or something.
It really
like,
does. It totally
like does. Calculon stars but... and Robopocalypse.
I mean, it's not even coming out till 2013 or something, but I just had to bring it up because I just think it's so hysterical. And Steven Spielberg's doing it, so it could be, you know, it could be really cool, right?
Robopocalypse? Maybe? Okay, so
it's supposed
Spielberg?
To be like, it's supposed to be the fate of the human race after a robot uprising.
Robopocalypse?
Yeah. Half robot. But apocalypse. Really,
like, I mean, seriously, like,
okay, but it's like, and it's Robopocalypse? Based on a book, right?
Is it called Robopocalypse?
Yes.
Really? I mean, that is like the laziest shit ever.
And then the Cloverfield writer guy did the adaptation.
Oh my god, I really want to like it, but Robopocalypse?
I know. I read that and I just was like laughing out loud the whole time because it's so ridiculous. Like, I don't even care if the book was named that. Like, somehow that got through publishers and they were like, "Yeah, cool, you're onto something here. People are gonna pick
that
up and read it."
Doesn't that seem like
change it for the movie?
They're gonna change it, right? By the time that it comes out, they're gonna change it,
one
right?
One would hope,
because it seems like placeholder. You know, like, it's that robot apocalypse, Robopocalypse.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't really be like, all right, let's put down $100 million on Robopocalypse.
Unless it's going to be like a Snakes on a Plane kind of movie.
Yeah,
you need
but
to
that
remove
Bond.
The title. Exactly.
Robopocalypse. That, like, it kind of, like, makes the gag reflex. Like, I don't know. It's doing bad things to me.
Yeah.
Oh, but it is funny. But carry on.
Okay. So, I have just started reading Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. It's
Ooh.
Been a book that I've had for a while and haven't read it. And so, I've been, like, wanting to read it for ages and just, you know, haven't gotten around to it.
How is it?
It's good. I haven't gotten that far. Like, I literally started it yesterday.
Okay.
So.
All right. I looked at the pictures. Does that count?
Sure, why not? Anyways, Natalie Portman was like originally attached to it, which
yeah.
was kind of, I thought was kind of cool. I mean, I like Natalie Portman
yeah.
for the most part. Like,
she's
we were
okay.
talking about earlier, you know, she kind of ruined herself with Star Wars.
Oh, Padme,
but...
Padme.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. I just think about I just get so angry every time I think about, like, she's died because she's lost the will to live. Like, it makes me want to punch. It makes me want to build a time machine and go back in time and punch George Lucas as a baby in the face. That's how much that pisses me off.
Oh, God. Plus, I know, like, the age gap between her and Anakin in the first one was
it's
just,
creepy.
Like, so...
But she lost the will. Princess Leia's mom died because she lost the will to live. Come on.
And then, like, you know, like, their little, like, God. Love scenes in the second one were like laying in the grass. It's so cheesy. Like, oh, so
but
bad.
She lost the will to live and she died.
Ya. Pathetic.
Dude,
anyways,
baby George Lucas, I'm gonna punch him in his little face.
So, originally, she was attached to the film, but it has now, unfortunately, been delayed to, like, God knows who or when.
When? I think we're going with when on that one.
I'm tired. I can't help it. because both the director and Natalie Portman have, like, backed out of the film, which
oh,
is really sad.
That could be a bit of a wrinkle.
Just a small one. But I'm really, really rooting for it, that it will get made.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no kidding.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Basically, I couldn't find a lot of really interesting female and horror news notes,
which is maybe a symptom of a greater problem, but
yes.
I'm not going to get on my feminist
but
soapbox scene right
because
now.
Because I love, like, old horror movies and older, like, stuff.
Men, older men.
No, I wasn't going to say
I'm
that.
Kidding. Older
okay.
men's stuff. Got
so,
it. Yeah.
And I love Sam Raimi.
Oh, I love Sam Raimi. Okay, I'm on board with this
okay,
already.
Okay, he has won the rights to produce The Day of the Triffids.
Ooh.
Which, I don't know if you've actually seen that or if you've only seen the one with, you know, the guys that make fun of the movies. Like
oh,
the robot.
MST3K?
Yeah, they did. I think they did that
Did
once.
They do one? I haven't seen that.
But anyways, I've seen that movie, and Day of the Triffids is, like, laughably bad, you know, the original.
That shit scared me when I was a little kid.
Well, watch it again, because there are parts of it that are, like, incredibly boring and laughably bad. But, I mean, you know, the plot of, like, the meteor comes
yeah.
down, and it's, like, these alien plant things that spawn. And, like,
my mom had to explain to me that there was really, the promise, there are no Triffids.
Oh, that's so cute.
Because I was really afraid of, not of plants, but I was really afraid that, like, maybe they existed and I needed to be worried about plants.
That's awesome. Anyways, I think that, like, a remake of this movie, though, could be really awesome. And with Sam Raimi attached to it, it could have that humor kind of tinge to it.
He could be, like, is he going to go, like, super serious, like, a la The Gift? Or is he going to go Dark Man and make it all...
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, right? I know. Me too. Like, sort of, like, almost like circus freak style.
Yeah.
That could be cool. Well, I'm down. I love Sam Raimi. So I'm ready for some more Sam Raimi horror.
Yeah. And then, okay, Warner Brothers is planning to make a new Twilight Zone movie.
Really?
Yeah. Which, I love the Twilight Zone. Like, own all of them. Watch them a million times. Love the Twilight Zone. And so if they're gonna, I even love the movie that was made, you know.
Me too. I like the movie.
Yeah.
With Dan Aykroyd. It's like, mm-hmm. You want to see something really scary?
But guess who's attached to this one?
Uh-oh.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh.
Yeah. That should be interesting. I mean, they haven't said, like, I haven't read anywhere.
He was in Critters 3. He's returning to his roots, finally.
I have no idea, like, where they're going with it. Like, if they're going to do another one of those, like, three vignettes.
It's got to be an anthology, right?
I would assume. But, you know, which ones they're going to pick out to do.
I wonder if he's just going to do the Rod Serling thing.
Yeah, if he's just going to be, like, the host guy or what.
All I can think about now is, like, the scary door. From Futurama.
That was so good.
I love the scary door.
They did such a good job with that. Such a good job. And, like, his glasses fall off and then his eyeballs fall out.
Yeah. I'm still, like, when I was a kid, I saw an episode of The Twilight Zone and it totally, like, scarred me for life. And so, and it still scares me to this day.
Which one?
It's from the 80s version where, like, this chick's in the mental institution and she's saying that there's, like, people in the walls and there's, like, faces that come out of the walls and they're, like, watch her and stuff. Like, that still to this day completely freaks me out.
Yeah, Twilight Zone is like that. Like, there are just images from it, and I mean, obviously this wasn't the old Twilight Zone, but still, where it just, like, sticks with you, you know.
That, and there's an episode of The Real Ghostbusters that really scared me.
Wait, what?
You remember that cartoon, The Real Ghostbusters? Yes. Okay, well, when I was a kid, there was an episode, I watched it every Sunday until this one episode. And then I stopped watching it because it scared me so bad.
Okay.
Where Egon, like, where the boogeyman comes back for Egon.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, and the boogeyman's really scary. So, recently I was like, okay, it's time to go ahead and put this behind me. I'm grown now. I'm 32. So, I was like, okay, I need to, like, get over this. So, I, like, went to the Google. And I would, like, put it in, and of course the video shows up.
Yes.
I started to watch it. I had to turn it off.
Are you serious? Oh my god. You're hilarious.
Girl, that shit is scary.
You're hilarious.
No, it's, like, legit scary. Yeah. I need to, like, sit down and actually watch it for real so that I can get over my fear.
Yeah, but there are things like that. Like, we were talking about, you know, we mentioned the people under the stairs earlier in the show, and, like, that's one of those movies that really creeped me out when I was a kid, and I've watched it again since then, and it's still creepy.
Yeah.
Like, the guy in the leather, like, sex mask thing.
Yeah, total sex mask.
So the creepy. Gimp. Yeah.
Bring out the gimp.
Ugh.
All right, so carry on. I didn't mean to totally derail us.
No, totally fine.
Do.
Anyways, there's just one more thing going back to, like, old stuff. I am a huge, like, Tales of the Crypt fan.
Mm-hmm.
Such a huge fan. And of the comic, too. Like, I have all the big, like, anthologies.
Oh,
I love
wow.
to read them and stuff. The art is amazing. The stories are great. And they are now, like, using the content from both Creepy and Eerie magazine, which are really similar. It's the same kind of thing as Tales from the Crypt. They have their little Crypt Keeper type
uh-huh.
person.
Are those, like,
and
the EC comics or something?
Yeah. And, well, yeah, it's like a magazine similar to what Tales from the Crypt was like.
I was pretending to know, and you just called me out, was what just happened.
So, like the rights to these have been bought up and they're going to be used for like feature films, TV, and what? Even like some kind of like online content.
Cool.
Which I think is really, I don't know, that sounds really cool to me.
Yeah.
Because I love those stories. They're so neat.
Very cool. Right on.
Next time, though, it's all going to be about the women. There's going to be women in news that I want to talk about.
You did good. What are you talking? I mean, it's good to have a mix of things. I like to make sure that there's a couple of women-centric stories just because, like, that this is all from the feminist or female perspectives and feminist perspectives. So, but no, great job, as usual.
We could talk about Blubberella.
No, we're not talking about Blubberella. There will be no, like, fatsploitation on this podcast.
Thank God.
Okay, so should we get to the our favorite part of every
Yay!
Show? This is the part where, actually, although I'm getting, I get, seriously, like, I better go get my textbooks because someone's trying to take me to school. So what do you want to start with? Should we start with our letter or our voicemail? Let's start with the voicemail. So let me play this for you.
Good afternoon, young ladies. Evil Prodigy here in Northern California. I just wanted to let you guys know I did enjoy the last episode. It was pretty entertaining. And now we know vaginas are scary. I do look forward to some zombie reviews. I'd like to say that I've been listening to you guys since pretty much episode one. And you girls have come a long way. You all mesh really well together. It seems like it's coming real natural for you guys. Keep up the good work. And we're listening out here in Northern Cali. Evil Prodigy. Thank you.
All right. So our voicemail this week comes from Evil Prodigy in Northern California.
Northern Cali.
Wow. So he's been listening since from almost the beginning. This dude is, he's loyal and awesome and clearly a masochist. Aww. I mean, he stuck through, remember, like, all the technical difficulties had and...
Yeah, episodes. You're a saint for sticking with us through for all real. That.
Like, if you go back to listen to the other episodes, it sounds like we're, like, recording in a wind tunnel. It's like... But so, like, mad props to him for sticking with us. That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
And the zombie episode is coming. We're planning something now. Spoiler alert, episode 20.
Woo-hoo.
It's going to be all about zombies. We have some fun stuff planned. It's not completely all in stone yet, but... but it'll be good. It'll be zombies.
We promise.
So thank you very much for the feedback. It's always awesome to hear from our listeners, especially when they're representing Northern California. Hey.
Thank you.
All right. So, and he didn't ask any questions or anything, did he? Okay, cool. All right. And we got one letter this week, and which is good because it's a little bit on the longer side, which is awesome, but... This person takes issue with something that I said.
I love how they write to me and take issue.
Whatever. That's cool. I didn't even know about it. So until today, so I haven't had time to like fully mount my defense. Okay, so this one comes from our buddy Eddie at sourceportmovies.blogspot.com. We got to plug him because he's our homeboy and he's awesome. Even if he doesn't agree with me on the movie signs. Okay, so hello Ariel and the girls. And a special hello to guest girl Lisa of the Formidable Boobs. So that's funny. Awesome. Like, the first thing she said to me when I told her that the episode was up, she's like, you cut out the thing about my boobs, right? I'm like, hell no. You say it? Too bad. You got a mic in front of you. It's not a hidden mic, so.
Deal with it.
It's all fair game. Okay. All right. Since I hated how my accent sounded on voicemail, I will write this month. It was, by the way, a Boston accent, not a Massachusetts accent. Well, I personally like his accent, so yeah. I'm kind of sad that he didn't.
Am I like mistaking where Boston is?
I know. I was like, do I need an atlas? Like,
isn't Boston in Massachusetts?
Isn't it the capital of Massachusetts? Is Boston the capital of Massachusetts? It is, right?
I think so.
Boston. Episode 18 was great and left me with so many things I wanted to talk about. So, my email, it may be a bunch of bullet points by the time I am done. Let's start with the idea that Rachel can defend signs. Really? Yes, really. I suppose if you can suspend disbelief enough, you can believe that an intelligent race from another planet, a race that has mastered the ability to travel vast distances through space, they see this little planet out at the outer edge of the galaxy, and they decide conquering it is a good idea. Now, I know that in their meeting, someone brought up the fact that water burns them like fucking acid, and it would be stupid to conquer a planet that is 70% water. They are intelligent, after all. Sure, the next available planet to conquer is like 3 times... as far away, but water burns them like fucking acid. So maybe let's not conquer Earth. Okay, so if that logic in its simplest form isn't enough, let's look at the spiritual side of the movie. We have a minister who has lost faith in his beliefs after his wife was cut in half by a drunk driver. Lucky for him, she lay pinned between the car and the tree enough so that she could say goodbye. In this goodbye, we get an idea that all things happen for a reason. She wants Graham to see the signs. She wants the son to be able to be silly and the little girl to listen to her brother and for Meryl to swing away. Everything is built in so that they can perfectly protect themselves from the aliens by Meryl swinging away. So really, this is God's way of getting Graham back to his beliefs. Kill his wife. Invade the planet with intelligent, not really, aliens, having little girl leave water around, almost kill his son, and then have the home run and strikeout leaders for the minor leagues swing away. Good thing his home run instinct took over. It would not have been such a nice ending if he had swung over and over at the water glasses, only to repeatedly miss. It is just so unbelievable.
I'm kind of getting on board with Eddie here.
Hey, whoa, slow down. Now, to give credit where it is due, M. Night is not a bad movie maker. Even when the story is ridiculous, he knows how to build tension, create useful beats, and film scenes. Technically, the movie does a lot of things right, but this is not a hard-to-watch movie. It is just the story arc that's crazy. Bah humbug. Well, allow me to reply. I mean, here's the thing. Nothing I'm going to say is going to completely change your mind, and nothing you're going to say is going to change mine. I don't just like this movie. I love this movie. My argument as far as the whole, like, acid water being acid, it is another planet, and I would say that humans are pretty intelligent, and when we go to another planet, we don't know everything about it. Like, when we get to Mars eventually, like, if you know, like, we start terraforming, there's probably going to be things there that kill us that we don't know about, because maybe we didn't have it on our planet. So just to play devil's advocate here, I understand everyone's like, it's 70% water. But what if they've never been around water before? Like, maybe that's why it burns them like acid, is because they natural selection has not selected against something that they have never been in contact with.
Bravo. I like your argument.
Thank you. Okay, so that's my argument for that. As for the spiritual thing, I mean, if it didn't work for you, that's totally fine. I mean, it's kind of the whole metaphor that the movie is based on, is that everything happens for a reason. We could get into a theological discussion about whether or not, like, why good things happen or bad things happen to good people, and why God does these horrible things. But the whole, and, you know, I'm not on board with any of that. But for the sake of the logic of the film, for the sake of the, like, the purpose of the film, it's all about that no matter what happens, that there's, no matter how bad things get, there's always a purpose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I mean, it's a good movie. I love that movie too. And there are parts of it that I don't think, like, work 100%. Like, yeah, he's right. You wouldn't have to be like this amazing baseball player to be able to hit a glass of water with a baseball bat. I get that.
That was hella funny. It's like, good thing he was tapped into his home run hitting, not his strikeouts.
I'm with you on that part, but I love that movie.
Yeah. I think that those are things that, you know, they could, if those are the kinds of logical issues that you struggle with, which is totally legit, it pulls you out of the movie, it will affect your enjoyment. But there's so much other stuff going on around that, like, you know, really beautifully acted,
characters, well-written, interesting, likable characters,
yeah.
Really great suspense built with the atmosphere and the score of the movie and just the general feeling that you walk away from with it and the journey that you go on with these characters that you really legitimately identify with and care about that, like, to me, it makes some stuff that you have to play devil's advocate about kind of forgivable. But that's my opinion, you know? Yeah. And that's totally, I mean, for all the people who've given me shit over Signs over the years, this has been the funniest argument. So I'll give him points for that. Most people are just like, you know, tell me I'm stupid. But I like it. Okay, moving on. I will now go ahead and back you up on something. Wreck and Wreck 2 are excellent films, and I hope everyone finds a way to see them. Totally agree. We are on the same page on this one. I can't wait for you to see Wreck 2. And I'm like, anytime you want to watch it, I have it. Like, come on over. We'll do this.
Awesome.
Because it's hella good. Now the features. I saw Rabbit in the last science fiction marathon last February. And then he has a link to it, bostonscifi.com. And I didn't really do a review more than just gave it a grade. I wrote at the time, Rabid, 1977, David Cronenberg's slow and not great film about a woman experimented on in surgery after an accident who has unwanted consequences. Rating, 4.1. Still, I really enjoyed y'all's take on it. I'm not too sure this early Cronenberg deserves your excellent attention, but I enjoyed the conversation. Yeah, I mean, we definitely were not, I don't think any of us really liked it.
No.
But like we said at the time, there were a lot of like really interesting ideas that, you know.
Yeah.
And like in a lot of ways, it's like, Cronenberg's creepy, man. Like, he is like a soothsayer. I swear to God, like, so much of the stuff that happens, you know, the themes that he talks about in movies, like, you know, are just like a decade or two behind.
Mm-hmm.
It's really spooky. Especially considering the themes in his movies are so.
Oh, God, disturbing. I know.
Okay, Teeth. Oh, my. What a disturbing little movie. Pervy guys everywhere, just making men look bad. Watching this movie, I am just left with the idea that guys are real assholes. Having never really been an asshole guy myself, as far as I know, I just want to punch these idiots. I think it was really uncomfortable watching these sleazeballs interacting with Dawn, but knowing what was coming at least serves them right. In this film, we at least know from the beginning that Dawn is not defenseless. Plus, the mix of humor makes the movie less offensive. Dawn is struggling with her issue and is still unbearable. It is unbearable when she uses her condition on the brother. Incest is just too fucking gross.
I'm kind of with you on that.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, for sure. I mean, he was.
That was a fucked up relationship.
Yeah.
Fucked up little boy.
All right, now, I spit on your grave. Again, we're talking about it. Oh, we got stuff to talk about too tonight. Now, I spit on your grave. Again, like in my voicemail, there's no reason... none to see this movie. Don't be the cat. Your curiosity will only kill you in a metaphoric way. I know there's a remake on the way, but no! It's just not worth it. The original is shit, and the new one will be too. Sometimes ideas are just bad. They can't be improved upon. Sometimes a movie is bad, and just because it is shocking, it is not good and should not be promoted. This is that movie. So I implore you, again, do not do a show covering a movie and its
My
remake.
Goodness.
On a side note, I love trying to find out where scenes in movies were filmed. I just saw the street signs when Jennifer heads into the cabin, I Spit on Your Grave. I Googled mapping the route intersection and the small town is in Litchfield, Connecticut. Not really Hickville, more like an NYC suburb. How weird is that?
That is.
That's really interesting. It never even occurred to me to like Google an intersection when you see it. But
yeah,
I mean,
like that.
That's pretty cool.
That's clever.
I got to listen to Rachel and Summer on the Horror Etc. podcast, and I just want to pass... Oh, Horphilia. Actually was on the Horror Etc. podcast once. If you go back and listen to their extra episode, Ted and I do have a conversation about vampires and Twilight and all kinds of stuff. And I just want to pass on to them that Killer Clowns from Outer Space is one of my favorite flicks. It is so much fun with so many cool ideas about clowns and how alien ones would do things. Excellent for those
for those nights when you have a group together to watch a movie.
Oh, very good point. Oh, I love that movie. I saw that like with my brother and a couple friends one night. It was just like on TV when we were like, you know, 13 or something. Uh-huh. And I fell in love with that movie. I've seen it so many times.
It's just fun.
So much fun.
And clever.
So much fun.
And just, it's like kooky. I don't know. I love it. It's absolutely a blast. Ideas from listeners. This is an idea. Post what you're going to review next on the ahead of time on the site or on Twitter. I'd like to play at home by watching the same movies before getting the podcast. Can't wait for the next episode. Have a great month. Peace. Have a great month. I plugged you on my blog this week. He sure did. I actually saw that before he told me about it because you know what? I go to sourceportmovies.blogspot.com. Okay.
Yeah, so thank you.
Yes, thank you. And he said really Much nice things about us. I'm not sure how deserved they are, but I accept them. So definitely check his site out again. All right. So good stuff there. I think I think the reason we don't talk about it on the show before is a lot of time we don't really have it planned. I kind of come up with it on the fly. And for sure. I'm pretty sure Eddie and I are friends on Twitter and I think Facebook too. So I'd be open to that. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, we might want to talk about it with everybody, but I think it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. I mean, for people who do want to play along.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, cool. So that's it for listener mail. As always, we absolutely love hearing from our listeners.
Yes, write more.
So please feel free to drop us a line. You can send us an email at rachel@zombiegirls.com, ariel@zombiegirls.com, summer@zombiegirls.com, or if you want to call us, you can leave us a voicemail at 1-678-6-Z-Girls. And we do encourage accents and drunk dialing, so all of the above are welcome.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to
homework.
So this is the new segment. Last time we introduced it, so this is the first time we're going to be doing it. So the deal was we all kind of admitted the fact that we inevitably have some major holes in our horror watching library, pedigree, whatever you want to call it. I'm not really sure quite what the correct word is, but I'll think about it. And we each week are going away watching something independently that we feel like we need to have seen to really properly be able to critique the movies that we talk about now. And Ariel, you want to go first?
Sure.
I just want to reiterate, you did this to yourself.
I know. So, if you all remember last time, I said that one of the big holes in my movie watching that I've been meaning to watch for years and have been putting off and putting off and putting off.
With good reason.
With very good reason was Last House on the Left.
The original.
Yes, the original. So, I went and I watched it.
So, what'd you think? Wes Craven. What'd you think?
Okay, I like Wes Craven, but this movie, big thumbs down for me.
Okay.
For a number of reasons. One, like, the content itself was just not enjoyable or scary for me at all. I didn't even feel like there was this, like, suspense or tension or, I don't know, none of it really worked
for
me on
that level. Did you get any sort of emotional payoff in terms of, like, the same, because, I mean, you're supposed to kind of get that, like, you know, vengeance sort of revenge thrill from it. Did you get any of that?
Like, there are some revenge movies that work really well, especially action movies. I like revenge action movies, and they tend to work fairly well for me. For this one, honestly, it didn't. I didn't get that payoff. And I don't know if I had watched it in a different mindset or a different mood, if it would have worked for me. But it was kind of nice to see the dad like chop the guys up with the chainsaw or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the whole movie was just icky and awful. And it kind of was like the bad guy characters and like the weird sex stuff and the creepy woman evil character and the bizarre things with the dad and the son, him controlling him with drugs and sex and all of that. It just kind of made my skin crawl.
Yeah.
And I didn't find myself enjoying any part of it, really. And I also felt like there were a lot of parts that were like the pacing was off or something. There was a lot of stuff that kind of like it turned into weird,
like kooky, like Smokey and the Bandit style cops, like bumbling cops.
Yeah. I didn't get that part at all. Like, I just, I didn't get it. And, like, I understand, you know, they were so close to the house when all of these horrible things were happening. And how awful is that, that, you know, if they had just been able to figure out where they were and get away, that they were that close to their own home, that the cops were that close to where they were and could have caught them. But these bumbling idiot cops, and like, you know what? I grew up in a home where we pretty much think that of cops in a lot of ways. But these guys were such, like, horrible caricatures, and like it didn't fit in with the rest of the movie tone wise at all for me.
Well, that's the same kind of thing with the host, where like there's like this weird tonal shift that like pulls you out of it. Was there anything about the movie that did work for you?
I mean, I think some of the acting, like on the parts of the girls, was really good. You know, that some of the stuff where it's like they're telling him they have to have sex with each other, and the one girl kind of takes control because she realizes that they're going to die if they don't, most likely they're going to die if they don't do this. And the other girl is like so scared that she can't make herself do it. And she kind of like takes her under her wing and says like, just look at me, just focus on me. We have to do this. And that kind of worked for me. Like the stuff between the two of them. But other than that, I just didn't like the film at all. And I wouldn't want to ever see it again. It's just...
Do you think it's the themes that you have problem with, or is it more just the execution?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I mean, I think that the themes weren't something that I'm naturally, like, drawn to and really want to see. But it wasn't... I could have kind of maybe seen it working just because there weren't really long, drawn-out scenes where you see the rape happening. And do you know what I mean?
There's a pretty intense rape scene in that movie, though. And it's actually one of the few moments in the movie that I thought was, like, skillfully done. Where he, like, is this Krug, who's, like, the bad guy. Who, by the way, is the basis for the name Freddy Krueger.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Clever.
where he... It's like this like monster, and he attacks her and rapes her. And then like when he finishes, there's like that moment where you kind of like get the sense that he's just like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? Like he kind of has like a realization moment.
Yeah.
That was like one of the movies that or parts that stood out to me. And in some ways that rape actually bothered me more than the I Spit on Your Grave rape. I don't know.
See, I've never seen I Spit on Your Grave to be able to compare. But yeah, I mean, it really... It did bother me, but there was enough in, like, the later parts of it, there were enough, like, cutaways and things like that, that it just, I don't know. It's not a theme that I want to see.
Yeah.
It's not something that I'm drawn to. It wasn't, it was disturbing in, I don't know. There are movies that disturb me, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something.
Oh, I love that movie.
It's just awesome. So and good. This disturbed me and creeped me out and just kind of made my skin crawl, but in a totally different way, completely not enjoyable. And I also just, I just thought the execution was, I just thought it was poorly done. Too, yeah. Really.
You know what really, like, bugged me about that movie? It's, like, the dad is, like, ingeniously setting traps, like, a la Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street. And then the mom's, like, giving a blowjob. I mean, like, I'm like, really?
I know. Because it's like, she didn't have to draw him away like that. Like, it didn't have to go down.
Well, she could have drawn him away. She didn't, but she didn't, I don't.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, she didn't have to play this, like, I need you, I love you, I want to be with you kind of thing that she did with him. Like, that, it didn't have to happen that way.
Or him. Even when she got him, I mean, I could see using that even to just draw him away, but to, like, actually participate in the sex act, like, that's something when we, if, when and if we ever do cover I Spit on Your Grave, like, that's, there's something, I think there's something to that. I have to think about it more. But why it is in those films that the director or the writer, whoever it is, makes a decision to not just use it to lure the person away, but they actually participate in the sex act
and use it as like a way to, like, a revenge method.
It's weird. Like, like, I could see using your sexuality to disarm someone, but like,
but then to actually go through with the act,
draw the line, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just because it's more shocking. I don't know. Whatever. Okay, so do you feel like it was beneficial to have watched the movie? Do you feel like you have a greater understanding?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that I would better be able to talk about that type of movie having seen that. So, yeah, I mean, I think that it was probably a good idea for me to see it, but it's not something that I will ever want to revisit again.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Word. Well, I had a lot more fun with my
homework. I am assuming so. I hope so.
I confessed last time that I have not seen the Universal Horrors films.
Yeah.
Like all those Universal monsters. I mean, I know who they are. I know the stories, but I haven't actually watched the originals, the OGs. So I watched the 1931 Universal Frankenstein, starring Boris Karloff as Frankenstein, monster. As the monster. And I don't know any of the other people. Are they famous people that I should know?
And don't
I should
worry be ashamed
of myself. Okay, cool. And, you know, like, I've seen pictures of Frankenstein where he has, like, the bolts and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I went into this thinking, you know, you said there was pretty cinematography and, I don't know, like, I guess it's because I haven't watched a lot of these. I kind of went into it being like, oh, this should be interesting, but whatever. It kind of, I hate to admit it, a little bit, like, whatever. Boris Karloff is so incredibly charismatic, even though he, like, never speaks.
Yep.
Like, he has such incredible presence. And even though he's not that much taller than people and he has those lifts in his shoes, mm-hmm. he just seems so huge and so, like, intimidating. But at the same time, like, that has got to be the saddest story, I swear. I feel so bad. I'm so, like, the whole thing with, like, throwing the little girl, like,
yeah,
I mean, that's not knowing, but, like, drowning the little girl, but really not truly understanding, you know, the consequences of what he does. And just, you know, that he being, I don't know, like, he was created. He didn't, like, choose to be evil or, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. It's very, very tragic. I had seen, like, the, what's the remake with the,
Young Frankenstein?
No. It was just in my Kenneth Branagh. I've seen the Kenneth Branagh remake where Robert De Niro is freaking, it's like, right. I will have my revenge. You know what I mean? So to me, like, I mean, the Frankenstein story, I was like, I know the Frankenstein story. I don't really, you know, I just really didn't care that much about it. But for some reason, and maybe it's because this one is really the best, like, it resonated in a way that it never has before. And that final scene where he's, like, in the burning windmill is totally heartbreaking.
Yeah, there's so many scenes in this movie that are just so poignant and heartbreaking, and you feel for this monster who at the same time is, like, killing.
Yeah.
It's artfully done, and the acting is so good. And it's a beautiful film too.
I was kind of expecting the acting too to be a little more stagey, like mm-hmm. a little more over the top. So yeah. When it was pretty subtle, that was another reason I was able to buy in more than I expected to, because I don't really respond that well to the super campy stage acting mm-hmm. unless it's on stage. So I was like, I mean, basically in every aspect that you could be, I really was pleasantly surprised by this movie. And I was like, even though it was really sad, I was having, like, a really great time with it. And it was funny because, like, there's so much of that movie that's been parodied and that
yes.
you see. So to kind of see the original place, like, a you know, it's alive, like, yeah. to see all of that, and, but to see it, like, played totally straight, you know, like, it's clearly not a parody of itself, it was, I don't know, it was really cool. I had a great time. I'm really, really glad that I saw it.
I'm glad.
It's gone a long way towards making me, more open and excited to seeing older movies. I'm really excited to watch the next one, in a way that I was kind of like, oh, I need to do, it's like homework, whereas now yeah. I'm, like, actually legit.
Good, I'm glad, because, I mean, I love these movies, and I revisit them frequently because I love them so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It really was, like, the cinematography was beautiful, and I don't know, it was kind of, I love the weird dad. I had a really good time. So, so what's your next homework?
Okay, well, I'm going to give myself a break.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Because after that one, I was just like, ugh, God, because there are things that, you know, like The Hills Have Eyes and other things that I need to watch, but, and I Spit on Your Grave and stuff like that, but I'm just gonna.
Eddie says no. Yeah.
So there are a lot of, there's some like modern horror movies that I've missed out on over the years. And after this next week, that's what I'm going to do. But for my next one, I'm going to go way back to the beginning. Something that I have always wanted to see and never have, even though I am like such an early horror fan.
Yeah.
And this is one that I've just never seen. I've always wanted to see it, but I never have. So I am going to watch Nosferatu.
Excellent choice.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it. I think and it'll be really fun.
Bela Lugosi, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I know that from watching Ed Wood. Not his films, but the movie Ed Wood. Awesome. Well, that's great. Okay. So I, because I had such an amazing time with Frankenstein, am going to stay true to my promise last time, and I'm going to stay within the Universal horror monster family. And so for the next episode, my homework is going to be the Wolfman.
Yes.
The original Wolfman. What's his name? Something Jr.
Lon Chaney Jr.
Lon Chaney Jr.
Yes.
So I'm very excited.
Yeah. It's a great movie. I think you'll really like it.
Awesome. Really like it. Yeah. I'm really excited. Also, just once we get through the Universal Monsters, because I want to watch them all. And I mean, I have some ideas of where I want to go next, but I want to open it up to listeners too. If somebody has a suggestion of something
that
I need to see, preferably maybe an older horror film, then feel free to let me know. All right. So that's basically it, except for our Netflix streaming pick. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do this. So this week's is a newer film from 2009. It's the movie Carriers. I don't think I've done this one as a Netflix streaming pick, but I really enjoyed this movie. It's in keeping with our theme of very bleak, sad, kind of downer horror films. It's at the same time also really good. Let me read you the description from Netflix. Okay. As a lethal virus spreads across the globe, brothers Brian and Danny, along with Bobby and Kate, seek a supposed plague-free haven. While circumventing the infected, the travelers turn against one another. Real-life brothers Alex Pastor and David Pastor write and direct this apocalyptic thriller, which co-stars Christopher Maloney. It also stars, the main characters are actually Chris Pine, who, of course, is Captain Kirk,
mm-hmm.
and some other people. Piper Perabo, people might recognize, but everybody else is kind of like new faces. I have to say, this, like I said, it's very bleak, very kind of depressing horror film, but it also is really well acted and creepy apocalyptic kind of horror that really kind of plays with the themes of, in a world where civilization is broken down, like, where is your moral compass? Like, where are the lines you draw? What do you do to survive? And, you know, what do you, like, what kind of sacrifices are you going to make in terms of people you love, for the people you love and with the people you love? So, I definitely recommend it. I had a good time with this movie and it's on Netflix streaming. So check it out.
Sounds good.
All right. So I guess that's basically it. Unless there's anything else that I didn't talk about.
I think we covered it all.
All right. So let me just reiterate. Let me just say again, it was awesome having you here. And of course, awesome having everybody out there here.
Yes.
We always love to hear from you. So please feel free to send us an email or leave us a message on our voicemail. Also, we have Facebook, but we're never really on it. So we'll leave that off. But feel free to drop us a line because we'd love to hear from everybody. All right. So I guess this is it for episode 19 of the Zombie Girls podcast. Come back for episode 20 where we're going to talk about zombies.
Woohoo. Thanks for listening.
Bye. And Hayden Panty Raid, whatever her name is, from I don't know her name, from Heroes.
What's going on? She's trying to jump on top of the TV.
Come on, we're not doing that. That's not okay. I don't need your coolie in my face. I love you, but that's enough. being like so sexually assaulted by my cat. What the
the hell? Nobody wants to see your culo. Keep it to yourself.
God, she's been in a lot of stuff that sucks. Oh, she's in the Night of the Demons remake, which we need to watch.
Mm-hmm.
A movie called Young People Fucking.
Wow. Wow, that's They're a title really
straightforward with that one. Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning. I could have sworn she was in something else.
Young People Fucking.
Yeah, you know, I gotta look see what that is now, right?
This does not give me good vibrations. I know, shame
no
on
good
me.
Vibrations.
No.
No.
Come on. Feel the vibration. You remember that song?
Yes.
Do you remember? I had that fucking CD, dude. I bumped the shit out of that. Do you remember the one? The do 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 and yes. Hail the bullets zip through the crowd. Okay, oh sorry. My. I'll be cutting
I
mean, that
like,
out too.
I like Mark Wahlberg and a lot of things that he's done, but I
don't
want
to see him with guyliner.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to my best friend Wikipedia. According to Wikipedia, Boston, pronounced Boston, is that's what it says on Wikipedia. Is the capital and largest city in Massachusetts. So I don't know.
If you have a Boston accent, you have a Massachusetts
accent.
Isn't
that how it works? I don't know. Maybe he needs to take me to school again. Okay. Holy cow.